but we're rolling, so whenever you feel...
Feeling good, buddy.
The Mercadian rhythms. Is that what it's called?
Mercadian.
What's the thing Enya talks about? Orinoco flow? What
the fuck is happening?
Warbands!
So, yeah. What's up, everybody? It's Brian B., a.k.a. Peyton Vagrant, a.k.a. your dad.
Your dad! Hey, guys, it's Bill. Roast Bill. PG underscore roast Bill.
PG. I always forget about that.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm not a very good one.
Yeah, you do just fine, Sean.
No, I think I do the dad part of the PG and the teaching part of the PG stuff good, but
yeah.
I never report anything. As far as Will Hungerford's concerned, on paper, I'm a terrible PG.
Yeah, that's probably true. And that's all right, though. I'm friends with him on Twitter. We're cool. Yeah, I mean, cool. We follow him on Twitter.
We're friends with him on Twitter?
We are friends with him, yeah.
Good.
Bill's not a Twitter guy, but I just started the War Man's Twitter a couple weeks ago and have just been tweeting like a mofo and really enjoying it, actually. I didn't really enjoy Twitter as like just a regular dude who had a Twitter, but as a podcast entity, I find it a lot more fun.
As a fame whore?
Well, it's kind of that, and it's kind of more, I just, instead of following a bunch of like tennis players and comedians and shit like that.
With the tennis.
Yeah, right? This time it's just all War Machine related, so if I just feel like chatting about War Machine with some bros or like seeing some cool pictures that Privateer Press retweeted, mm-hmm. I go to Twitter and it's awesome. So I'm really having a good time with it. And so you can follow us there at Warman's Podcast, facebook.com/Warman's Podcast. Use on minis. We always have a thread there as well. So, and speaking of the last thread, we had some nice pop there.
Yeah, it was really good feedback and we appreciate that. It helps us narrow in on what's really clicking with the people that are listening to the podcast, and we definitely got a lot of positive feedback on that last episode.
You know, there's a lot of voices out there, and there's only so much, you know, War Machine news to talk about, and I think maybe we sort of inadvertently found, like, a niche for ourselves in that we really struggled and spent a lot of time hammering out this sort of idea of talking about the mental game of War Machine.
Yeah. Or as Jay called it, the Zen hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how Zen we are, but I think it's a super interesting journey to be on. And in a way, just us sort of preparing to talk about it and then talking about it on the podcast actually really, I think, has helped us both. Like, absolutely. I felt sharper and I felt less inclined to tilt at our last event than I probably ever have.
I felt several instances, both in practice and in the tournament, where I thought back to the stuff that we said on that podcast, yeah. And myself, you know, words that came out of my own mouth about, you know, how to behave, you know, how to look at, you know, a dice roll that doesn't go my way or whatever, yeah. And keep it in perspective and not let it tilt me.
Well, it's at the very least, it's we sat there and lectured, so now we have to live up to that.
Yeah,
right?
It's more like I can't be a hypocrite.
Yeah,
I said all right. That shit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, you got to walk the walk, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, talking about when I say the last event, you know, obviously, if you've listened to the podcast here in season two, we've been discussing Michigan Cup quite a bit. It's a biannual event that we have.
Semi-annual.
Here. Semi is but biannual.
Biannual will be every other year. That's every 2 years.
How that works? Fuck.
Semi is half.
All right. Well, I have a semi for Michigan Cup. Yeah. Segue. So not even a segue. We're still talking about Michigan Cup. Anyway, so this event, it's like a, you know, Mayhem Cup, Intermountain Cup style event. We've talked about it a bunch. So we won't belabor you with the details, but we've been tuning up for that, podcasting about it. And then now we've played in it this past weekend. And, so we're going to chit chat about our games a little bit, try to keep the, you know, battle reports or summaries or whatever you want to call them, you know, 5 minutes ish each.
Yeah.
You know,
keep them nice and short.
It ended up being a 5-round event. It could have went 6. Thank God it didn't.
You're that welcome, everyone.
Yep. Yeah. We had something to do with that. And, yeah, so, you know, why don't we maybe reel off the teams here? What were the three teams from?
Well, what was your team?
My team was me and Dan Hojnacki, mm-hmm. and Dreyer, Eric Dreyer, or Meta Dreyer, as everybody refers to him. So we had Trolls and Two Circle. And I'll talk about my list later. Dreyer brought Epic Mandrake and Runes of War. Very good Epic Mandrake list with double warders. It's pretty scary.
And I'll say it. He's a pretty good Mandrake player.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. For sure. And Dan brought a Kruger 2 list, which I don't know all the details on. I know it was like a more of a spell-slingy one. I think he had Druids and Megalith. Yeah, so it's a little more technical Kruger list than what I brought. And then he brought a Kaya 2 list, which was more of a puncher face-off with five. The Kaya 2 theme list.
Yeah, it was tier 4, I think.
Yeah. It gets the Druids, it gets the Skinwalkers, and then you get a shitload of heavies at with AD and minus 1 points. It's a pretty sweet tier.
Yeah, it is. It's a nightmare for me.
Well, and Kruger covers it nice, so I thought those are pretty good choices, so...
All right, I had Gaby B and Marshman on my team. Marshall was playing. I think both of his lists were tier four. Butcher 1 and Vlad 3. All the horses.
I don't know if his Vlad 1 is tier 4. My guess is probably yes. I know his Butcher 1 is tier 4.
Yeah, so he's playing Butcher with all the robot men.
Yeah,
Man of War combo, yeah. And he's playing all the horses with a Colossal.
Yeah, speaking of going back to the Twitter conversation for a second, I posted a bunch of pictures from the event on Twitter over the past week. There's a bunch of pictures of various armies, including Bill's Red. Marshall's K-Roar are very distinctive. They're like white and red. They're really sweet looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gabe took some pictures, so there's pictures of his Circle Army, which is nice looking too.
Yep. And then Gabe was playing Kruger and P-Kaya?
Yes.
And you probably know his list better than I do.
His P-Kaya list is basically been terrorizing our local meta forever because it, even in SR 2014, where scenarios are still very live, that list, outside of a couple bad matchups, like Signar is probably its worst matchup, it is brutal to deal with because it fits his playstyle like a glove, which is basically hit and run and kind of grind you out and end the game with a significant advantage of like heavies compared to you. Like he wants
to hearing people say that P-Kai is bad blows my fucking mind because I know Gabe.
Yeah. Well, and part of it, I've trolled him or, you know, kind of said this to him jokingly before is that like, we don't have a Signar player in our meta currently. And that's why he can drop this fucking list so much. Cause like the entire list is stealth. It's, you know, he's got fucking basically stealth druids in there, blood trackers.
Oh, I know.
Double stalker, pure blood, some other shit. And yeah, it's got some very, very good attrition game. And you just can't, it's like trying to grab a slippery bar of soap, man. It's, you know, some scenarios it's going to have some trouble contesting, but, you know.
It's never been an issue against me. I must never land on the correct scenario with their correct list against him. I don't know, man.
Some of it, I think, too, has to, you know. Tough undead blood trackers are not terrible at towing zones, and you know, and sometimes he'll just commit the whole unit and be like, "Well, I'll kill them all."
Yeah,
and that'll keep him, you know, up in, you know, not up in scenario, but keep him from not going down on scenario.
Yeah, while that, he's already an excellent scenario player.
Yeah, while he's picking your army apart. So,
and then we had a third team. We were zerging this event.
Yeah, we had 9 players out of the 36. So, you know.
So our third team was Jarek, Tommy, and DJ.
Yeah, we just brought one quarter of the event. No big deal.
And extra props to DJ for his first tournament that had more than 2 or 3 rounds.
Yeah, DJ is a relatively new player. I'm not sure how long he's been playing, but I know he's been kind of sporadically. I think like his work is kind of keeps him busy, so he hasn't been able to show up, you know, on a weekly basis like some of the other guys. But we had a guy have to drop because of an obligation. So, DJ, you know, we were like, "Hey man, you want to hop in? I mean, we're not expecting you to crush the whole field or anything. Just have a good time and play in a 5-round tournament and get some experience."
Yeah. It's have some fun and, you know, do us a favor by keeping a team whole.
Yeah. Right. Right. I mean, it's playing 2 players or playing with a 3rd player who is a new guy. You know, you take the new guy, right? I mean,
yeah, why not?
Yeah. There's no penalty there. So, and you know, it was, we wanted him to get that experience because we want him to come up and compete with us. And I think, I think the light bulb kind of clicked on for him over there.
I think so too. And that's, you know, that first big tournament you go to, it's a turning point or a potential turning point where if you have a good experience, you're like locked in. And if you have a bad experience, it's really bad news and it could turn somebody off.
I 100% agree. And we tried to make sure that he had a good time. Like we were all checking in on like, how's it going, man? And just kind of checking in on his like, you know, his well-being. And he never had that, like, thousand-yard stare that sometimes you see people with, you know, like, where he's, like, deer in the headlights, like, oh, fuck.
Well, the good news is DJ is a super good-natured dude.
Yeah.
And he's not like, a rager or something.
No.
Even his first game, he lost in, like, triple tiebreakers or something. Yeah. You know, when you're going to your probably second tournament ever or third tournament ever,
yeah,
and it's a big one, and you know, you can expect to get housed a few times, and I was super proud of him for the turnout that he did get.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things too, it's all about like kind of your mindset when you go in, right? Like if you go like, look, I'm new, I'm gonna try to steal some wins, but if it doesn't happen, no skin off my back.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the correct attitude for somebody. You know, he got basically like a couple weeks of prep that we tried to give
exactly.
him.
Exactly, and he was playing a different faction than he normally plays.
Yeah,
too.
Right. He's like, yeah, I guess I'll play Kator, and we're like, cool. Here's, you know, Marshall's and Dan were letting him borrow Kator models, and it was a good time. I'm really glad he got in there and that team. I think, you know, like Jarek is pretty experienced. Tommy's at that point where he's kind of turning the corner on.
Tommy's really been turning the corner. I'm glad because there was a time where he was kind of touch and go as far as like he wasn't there every week.
Yeah.
And he's been bouncing around on factions a lot. I feel like he locked into Legion pretty well. He was telling me the other day even after all that prep, he still wants to play more Legion.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it just clicks with you I'm not sure if it's the faction or if it's sort of you just find the right mental state where you realize like you finally let go of the idea that the models don't matter as much as you. And I think he's hit that point where he's like, I'm going to get really good at this and I'm going to get better.
That's
and
good.
I'm going to be there every week. So, you know, and I think in our meta, I mean, we just, you know, we're not going to crush him with, you know, a merciless frown on our faces, but to compete, you know, you've got to play weekly probably in our meta or you got to at least be a guy who's experienced and
you can't be super casual and expect to compete anyway.
No.
But I think that's probably true in a lot of metas.
I 100% agree. Yeah.
But regardless, we had 9 dudes show up strong. Everybody performed.
Yeah.
At least expectations or exceeded.
Yeah, no, I felt pretty happy with the end.
I was super happy. I don't think anybody walked away disappointed with how they did.
No. And I think some guys learned some lessons too about like playing in longer events. Like I don't think a lot of those guys had played a 5-rounder before.
Yeah.
And keeping focus at the end
I think a lot of those dudes had never even played 4.
Yeah. It's that 4th and 5th round. It's kind of like, you know, when you're taking like a 15-hour road trip by yourself.
Yep.
You hit that witching hour, like right between when, like, what is that, like 5:30 or between 4 and 5 when the sun is just completely down and it's like just about to come up. And that's when you're like that. That's the point where you're either going to be like, you know, fall asleep at the wheel and kill yourself,
the second wind.
Or you get that second wind. Yep. And if you're not experienced with it, it's like you better pull up the fucking road.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our guys hadn't done that before, so I think they learned some lessons about that. Maybe learned some lessons about making sure they bring food, stay hydrated, get enough sleep, those sorts of things. So
luckily, there was a nice like alternative fancy food store right next door for all our hipster friends.
Our smoothie needs.
They want to eat like
quinoa.
What were those freaking granola bars they were eating?
Dude, what's a quinoa?
What?
You've never seen that ad?
No.
The dude's like trying to grill like a veggie burger made of quinoa.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's like, what's a quinoa? And it's like, is this a loofah? Or something like that. Like, it's pretty good. But,
last time I ate this, we won.
Yeah, it's one of those like beer commercials. But,
it tastes like dirty grass.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, freaking vegan chocolate enhanced granola nougat. Gabe Chow,
yeah. Ancient grains that you've never heard of.
So you want to jump into?
All right. So just to kind of run down, we're just going to alternate back and forth per round. In round one, briefly discuss my 2 lists. I think we've discussed them a little bit before, but playing Cro-Mac and Kruger 2. Kruger 2 list was, and they're both very similar lists actually, which I'll get into in a second, but Kruger 2 list was Getterix Stalker, Pureblood Agorax, Bloodweavers, Single Stones, Double Shrimp, and Swamp Gobbers.
Cool.
Second list, Cro-Mac. Very similar list, actually, was...
Why don't you save the Cro-Mac till you play it?
That's fair. It's coming around to. Okay. Cool. So this Kruger list is what I ended up playing. I got paired up against Hickok, Jake Hickok, who is a pretty good player. He's a PG out in
Lansing.
Okay. So yeah, I always mix up Lansing and Ann Arbor.
That's because you're not a towner, man.
Yep, I am. I know that like Michigan State and Michigan fans are like ready to kill me right now.
I was gonna say.
Anyway, so
that's like when I Florida State, Florida, you.
Yeah, right. Seminoles, goddammit. So he had Runes of War, and he had I want to say it might have been Epic Madrak, but it didn't matter. I knew he was going to drop Runes of War because I was playing Circle. And I think Runes of War, in a lot of ways, is a comfort blanket list that you know, if you're playing in a potentially 5-6 round tournament. That's
Runes of War is the super in-style list right now with Trolls, it seems.
Yeah, well, it doesn't have a lot of bad matchups. And if you're playing Divide and Conquer 1 with 5 rounds, maybe 6...
Yeah.
Fuck, you just play it 5 times, you know.
Yep.
I mean, you ask Flanzer about, you know, like War Machine Weekend. Out of those, the tournament to get into the Invitational and the Invitational, he played his off list like a total of like twice compared to
one per tournament.
Ten times of the other list or the runes list. I honestly can't remember who got him and I were talking about this earlier. I can't remember who got the first turn, but essentially what happened was my goals with my Kruger list, which is kind of tuned to fight runes. It's not fully tuned, otherwise I would probably have druids in there, because druids give that list just a miserable time.
Yep.
But what tunes it towards runes is that the Bloodweavers can poke off Banishing Ward, and then Kruger can go to town with TK.
Yeah.
And he can really control the heavies by TKing them around, or pulling them out of the stone, or pulling them like away from the wall to drop their armor by 2 points, or even, God forbid, pull them out of the stone and away from the wall and then drop their armor by 4. And yep. Circle needs a little help with that. So he came up, I don't want to say tentative, but not as aggressive as I'm used to seeing runes. Like, Runes of War usually just, like, everything runs, wall drops.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, you know, everything is way up the table fast.
They figure out how far that wall can be forward, move it as far forward as they can, and then run everything to where it needs to be.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah. And he started with Banishing Ward, I believe, on Doomshaper, which was a little different than what I'm used to seeing as well.
Yeah, that is kind of wonderful.
I think he saw Kruger too, and he thought maybe that I would just try to assassinate him.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily hate the idea of that, but what it did do, and the other thing he did a little different than what Dryer did is Dryer lives with Elemental Communion on Mulk, so Mulk's always armor 23.
Yeah.
His Mulk was armor 21 a lot of that game, and it didn't really matter to be honest with you, but it could have had I played more of an attrition style. But basically, I ended up creating a situation with threat range that sort of he felt obligated to feat first, which is a win. Defensive feats, you don't want to feat first.
Yep.
So he feated first on me, and then I did some really dumb, hilarious shit because it was the first round, and I'm always like super tight in the first round. And then I cast a spell, which I knew I was going to take 2d6 damage, and then he rolled an 11. And then I'm like, transfer the 5 and the 6 to a beast, forgetting that. Like spending fury, so basically,
right.
and then I was like, well, and I'm sitting it right. So I'm sitting here on 5 fury when I do this because all I had cast that turn was a TK. Basically, I came up and feated, and then I TK'd myself to the flag in close quarters.
Wait, you feated as well?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, let me backpedal. He feated first defensively, essentially on my turn, which is the turn that his feats live. Basically, I came up, feated on him, which shoved his shit back, pretty effectively, and then. TK'd myself to the flag. Well, I was inside of his control when I did that, right?
Yeah.
So when I did that, I took a 5 and a 6 because he rolled a 5 and a 6 on the 2d6. And I was like, oh, shit. I forgot. Well, it wasn't that I forgot about that, but then I tried to transfer it.
Yeah.
And he's like, isn't that spending? And I'm like, and the judge was over, and we asked the judge, and the judge was like, yeah, let's look at the card. And the card says spend. And I'm like, yeah. Or not the card, but the book says spend about transfers.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I'm like, well, I've got 5 fury, so fuck it, transfer him. Or no, and I fucked the story up. He rolled a 10. He rolled an 11 on the 2 for the transfer. So essentially all I did was lose 2 fury and take an extra point of damage. So then Kruger's sitting there and I'm like, heal Kruger? Wait, nope, never mind. That would just kill me. Like, just my brain is fucking scrambled by this feat right now. So
That's awesome. Just
like, all right, Kruger's done.
Okay. This is like the third turn of the tournament?
Yeah, yeah. I'm always psyched that first game and... You know, Hickok's good, and then he's playing a good list, and, you know, it's just like, oh, fuck. And really, at that point, I had...
And you're spotting him 11 damage for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. So I had really widely spread my shrimp. Like, I had them way out on the extreme flanks, because I found with Runes of War, you got to flank it. he had pretty good luck with his Rune Shapers hitting and killing some early, but then as the game developed, I managed to hook my one unit of shrimps around behind his caster and behind the Genissa wall, where the wall was getting placed.
Yeah.
Additionally, what happened was I had a turn where I could have assassinated him, I thought, because he had, under my feet, he had knocked down and strangleholded my Getarix, right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the next turn, and he was about 4 inches from Kruger, from Doomy. And Doomy was, like, up aggressively, like, 3.7 inches away from him behind a wall. And I think he had forgotten I had TK. Because he's like, oh, you can't get to me with Getarix. I'm safe. And he moved up. Well, I TK Getarix. Or, I shook the knockdown.
Yeah.
Primaled him, TK'd him.
Ooh.
And then sacrificed movement. And then started pounding on him. He had, like, 2 transfers. And I'm like, I'm going to fucking kill him.
Wait, sure. What? You don't need to sacrifice movement if you shook.
I did because he strangled me.
Oh.
Yeah. He basically created a situation where, like, he couldn't have, like, I could have done, I could have
you
moved
could only
or,
stand
yeah,
up
right,
or attack.
Right. But I was close enough that I could, the TK work. Well, so he forgot about TK. I forgot about, whatever the Mulg thing that,
the Mulg, protective fit.
Yeah. For some reason,
I could never fucking remember that.
I just recalled it being a move. I did not realize he kept getting attacked. So he, of course, first swing, crit smites me away from his caster. And I'm like, welp. And then at that point, of course, the attrition starts going poorly because I'm just like, well, here's a Getarix for free. And then as I went along, at this point, I'm like, all right, I'm going to score as many CP on my flag as I can and just sort of chaff him. And I'm going to try to hook around and kill his caster.
Yeah.
And then if I don't kill his caster, hopefully I survive the dice down with up on CP.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what ended up happening. We got dice down. I had 2 CP to his 0. He was up in attrition. I killed like an Earthborn. He killed like Stalker Getarix, some other shit. But his caster was on 1 hit point with 5 transfers, and I was rolling the dice from my unit of four
shrimp
that were left, that were in all in his back arc.
Nice.
And I had Kruger left, and I could have manufactured a situation where I pinned Mulg in place with 2 models. Kruger would have basically like zoomed up into lightning range and then like triple shot him with lightning. So essentially he had 5 transfers and no tough because I had a tree within 3 of him.
Nice.
And I had 7 attacks.
I was going to say, you got the tree to worry about.
So really it was like, does Kruger hit with that first lightning bolt or the second lightning bolt? I'm probably okay.
Yeah.
As long as the dice are okay on the shrimp. But anyway, it didn't come down to that. We got dice down and I had those 2 CP in my pocket, which Kruger can generate pretty easily with his feet.
Yeah.
I felt like had he been a little more aggressive early on, I think he probably could have pressured me into feeding first, which would have made the game a little different. But because the game kind of, because I saw an assassination, tried to take it, it got busted up my Mulg, and then I was like, then I was in complete panic
mode.
Mulg
just
like,
came in and wrecked up the
yeah,
place.
Yeah, like immediately I was like, well, that plan shifts because I'm now there's no way I can kill Mulg, Earthborn, Mauler,
yeah,
Axer.
Your
yeah, the only thing that I was killing pretty successfully is that shrimp will wear out.
Rune Shapers?
Rune Shapers, yeah. Magic Hands. Yeah. They will kill the shit out of the Magic Hands because they have concentrated fire and they can usually aim, or they can shoot Zephyr back and just make it really a bitch for those guys to hit him and kill him. I mean, you know, those guys can definitely kill. I mean, they're Power 14, Magic 7, but they're short-ranged.
Yeah.
So they got to move away. And I had them so flanked out that the Rune Shapers really were just, it was either go for shrimp or be involved in the middle of the table, but not both.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was a tight, I didn't play super well, but kind of one of those just like.
You kind of got away with it.
Well, you know, like I said, I saw an assassination, fucked it up, and then went, how do I fix this? And thankfully, you know, I had a CP advantage. Yeah. So.
I mean, anybody that paused this podcast after you said, so I transferred that 2 damage and took an 11 and gave him 2 fury for free.
Yeah.
And paused the podcast and went into work is going to come back out in the afternoon and go, how the fuck did he win that game?
Yeah, the main thing is about that list, his list, is that I kind of created like, I mean, first off, it was my feet turn that I did that.
Yeah.
So he wasn't getting any melee
yeah,
things
he wasn't
to me.
Just
can't charge, can't trample, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then additionally, you know, his only really ranged abilities were Rune Shapers, and one of them tried to walk up and tremor, and he was like a half inch out.
Ugh.
Yeah, so.
That sucks.
Yeah. So that was me. That was probably the tightest game. Well, it wasn't the tightest game, but it was a one of the tightest first round games I've played in a tournament in a long time. Hick's a good player, so
yeah, it's not. I like getting paired up against either like a familiar face or maybe at least somebody I don't already know is good. You know, either an unknown,
you can say,
or
you
familiar buddy.
You want to roll a noob and get it out of your system.
Yeah, it's nice to get a noob for sure.
Yeah, it is. It sucks saying that, but it's true. It's hard when you immediately jump in against a really good player first round. It's like, it's really just who's more mentally prepared at that point. And somehow I held it together, and I'm not really sure how I was.
Yeah. You got a lot of practice against that list.
That is true. That is true.
Dreyer plays the shit out of it.
Yep.
All right. So my first round, I got to play against our buddy Mike O. So I got one of the conditions I just said. I got to play against a familiar face.
Such a douche.
I love Mike, dude. He's such an awesome opponent, and he's such a good guy.
Mike O is a wild card. He's a friend of the podcast.
He is a wild card.
He's the lord of Fresh Coast Gaming, which is their blog, which is sort of a just all miniatures wargaming blog for the Flint meta. And they have a cool website, which I think is freshcoastgaming.com.
I believe so.
It
could be done, that.
Might be a blog spot. I don't remember. If you Googled Fresh Coast Gaming,
it would
see
be the
a
first
release.
Thing
yeah, and he's been running it for years, and there's a shitload of content on it. So
there's a lot of good stuff on there.
He's a good bro. He's a good bro.
Yeah, he is. So he was playing Scorn, and he was playing, what was that caster? We talked about it.
Epic Hexerus, I believe,
Epic
is what Hexerus, you said.
The one that steals Fury from everything
mm-hmm.
on its feet. Yeah, and his black spot.
That'd be him.
Yep. So he's playing him and Slingers and Incendiary. A bronze back and what's the other elephant with a rush?
Gladiator.
And he's got a Kraya in there too. So we line up. I'm playing Ron Fires on High, which is Hyperion, Phoenix, double Mittens, double Magister, double Arcanist, double Stormfalls with AD, and Epic Elf.
That, I think, arguably has been your most consistent list over the past year.
I think it's not even arguable. It's been my most consistent list.
Yeah,
but,
it's really good, and you're really good with it.
Thank you. So I've played Mike with that exact list probably two other times in tournaments. So he sat down against me, and he saw my two lists, and he's like, not that thing again. And he expected to see it, I think. And he listens to the podcast. I think I said I was going to play that list over and over again.
Yeah.
So as we're lining up, and we've already picked our lists and everything, he's like, I already picked the wrong list. He picked a list that had a lot of shooting, you know, like I just said, those Slingers and stuff, and all this, you know, AoEs and stuff that just aren't going to do anything to those Mittens.
Well, that and Ron's got Force Field. So AoEs are a problem, like fire AoEs.
He has Force Field, and they all have Force Barrier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said his list had Incendiary, or did he have
Incendiary, yeah.
Well, Incendiary have fire, so that's not too bad, but the Slingers are not going to do much. Not that they necessarily do much anyway, because they're so low rat.
Right.
The main thing is that, what the hell is he going to do about a polarity-fielded Hyperion?
Yeah, well, not a lot.
Yeah.
He struggled with it, for sure. I believe he went first. And he kind of just pressed. Yeah, he must have gone first. He pressed forward, and he put like all of his Slingers in the range of my Stormfalls, and I took probably 3/4 of his Slingers on turn one.
Yeah.
Without any retribution. Retribution. Oh, you know what else he had? The little needle gun guys. What are those guys called?
Venator Reavers.
Yep. Those little bastards were. I don't know, man. He had them clumped up like in Warhammer style.
Were they on a tray?
Five and five.
Were they on a rectangle?
They might as well have been on a rectangle.
He says he likes rectangle chat, like when we talk about rectangles.
Yeah, I saw that.
So there you go.
Yeah,
there's some rectangle chat.
He liked rectangle chat. They were all right behind a wall, conveniently placed about, I don't know, 14 inches from Hyperion.
Nice.
You see where that's going. So I slung a couple of Stormfalls at them, and he couldn't get close enough. I'm sorry, he was 14 inches after moving Hyperion, because I couldn't quite shoot him that turn. But the next turn, I consumed, I think, 8 of them.
Jesus.
It was bad. Every time I called for a crit consume in that tournament, I got it.
Oh, you like Babe Ruth called it? You're like,
crit consume. I was like, I need a crit consume here, man, and I got it.
Shit.
But what that boiled down to is, you're right, he couldn't threat the Hyperion. So the Hyperion just dictated, you know, what was going to happen in that game.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that Ron list is just like, hey, there's a bronze back. Let me just grab it, yank it way the fuck over here, turn it around, knock it down.
Yeah,
and Hyperion just walks up and punches it three times, and that's that.
There was a really funny moment in that game where he put his Kray out there, and he put the Animus up, and he's like, And then he ran his, like, Gladiator to, I don't know, probably about, like, 2.5 inches. And he puts it down, and he, like, crosses his arm and steps back, and he looks at it, and he looks at me, and I'm looking at him, and we're both like, that ain't 2 inches, man. And he's like, I don't think that's 2 inches. And I'm like, I'm sure it's not 2 inches.
Ah, Jesus.
We're going to find out in a second when we go fishing.
Yeah. Well, and with the feet, that 14 still isn't good enough, probably.
Yeah, so. Well, I don't think the Kray's Animus even affects spells.
Damn it.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
Right.
But either way, I was wailing it with brutal shots, too.
It's been a while for me, but I'm pretty sure it does.
But what it came down to is the Phoenix got to run over a wall after clearing out all those Venerator Reavers.
Mm-hmm.
Run over the wall, and he's like tapping Hexy on the shoulder. And then I feeded and force hammered him down the length of the wall. Feeded, force hammered him down the length of the wall. He slammed into a gobber. Nice. And then I just reeled him in with feeded mittens. And he died before he got to Hyperion's feet.
It's like always how that works.
And then Hyperion had 3 focus waiting for him. So
as far as scenario, just to, I think I briefly mentioned it in my discussion, but this is close quarters. Any scenario?
It was
action?
Never a
not
thing.
Really, yeah. That's kind of one that, like, if you're a opponent...
That one's pretty hard to make it a scenario. It's usually not a scenario until the very end of the game.
No,
after attrition is really worn out.
The only thing I'd say is that is true if time turns was not a thing. But in time turns, just grabbing a couple CP just to make sure you're up by dominating with your caster on your own flag is fucking huge.
It's hard to dominate that circle, though, man. It's hard to clear it out.
Just epic Kruger feet on him. I don't know.
Yeah, it must be nice. Oh, you know what? There was another highlight in there. He tried to black spot the elf.
Oh, boy. So by highlight, you mean just like basically making Mike look bad?
No. I mean, we both laughed at it when it happened.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's just ranged attacks on Kraya.
Yes.
Damn. So, yep. Poor Mike. That sounds like he zigged when he should have zagged on list selection.
Yeah, he said that, like, immediately.
His other list was like a Xerxes brick with that.
I think so.
That hit like a truck. Yeah, that might have had a better.
It probably has Tiberian in it, too, which is a pain for Ron.
Well, at the very least, he can use Tiberian as an anchor to keep his caster from getting just fucking randomly murdered.
Yeah.
You know, you still can pull the rest of his list. You know, pull dudes out of shield wall and stuff.
But. You do your arm locks and all that jazz, and you can mitigate it a fair amount.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Tiberian could just be like, hey, I'm going to charge this random, one of Mike's random models that he sticks next to the Hyperion, charge that with the shield, and then just be like, hammer, 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 hammer. Oh, look, it's dead.
Yeah.
Because I'm fucking Tiberian, and I'm like, just pow 21 all the time, or whatever he is. He's,
yeah, it's,
he's basically just the avatar in Scorn.
Yeah,
that guy's
pretty
so
much.
Fucking ridiculous. So
what's the dude that has Psychic Vampire?
The spell Psychic Vampire?
The spell Psychic Vampire on it. One of the casters in Scorn has it.
One.
And nobody ever runs that guy.
No.
That would stop me from dropping Ron, I promise you that.
Yeah. No, he's actually not terrible against Ron, I would say.
Good against all them druids that are running around too. Mike, take notes.
Yeah, well.
You want to stomp me?
He's
you want to stomp me personally? Take that guy.
Yeah, right.
I can't take Ron.
Yeah, just play Chromac, it's cool.
Yeah.
Or druids. Druids are also good against that.
All right, so round one, we're both 1-0?
Yep.
All right.
1-0. So at this point, the two kind of full GG teams that we talked about.
The two set from the start ones are both 3-0.
Yep. So that's
and
that's
then
nice.
The other team, the third one was, I think, 2-1.
Yeah, one thing we should talk about with the scoring of this event that was interesting was it's basically just a regular steamroller. They would not pair players from the same team against each other unless the situation absolutely dictated it that they had to.
Yes.
And then they also, and when I say from the same team, I don't mean like our 9 guys never played each other. I mean the 3 guys on my team never played each other.
And I think that held true for the entire tournament.
Yeah, I think
nobody
it did.
Played anybody
on
their team.
And then the other thing is the scoring was a little different than like Mayhem Cup or Intermountain Cup. And instead of cutting like the top 18 or top 8 or top 16 and giving them points based on position, it was the amount of total wins for each team.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a
A bonus win for
fully painted.
Yep.
All three players had to have all lists fully painted.
Yep.
Which you guys got. We did not get. We did not get because of me.
Bum. I don't think Dreyer was fully
painted. No, Dreyer wasn't painted either, yeah. So, interesting scoring. It weighs probably wins that are maybe not as valuable at the same as a win that is more valuable.
Yeah, a win on a guy that's 0-4 getting a bye in the fifth round is the same as winning when you're 4-0.
Yeah, but what I did like about it was that it kept everybody engaged fully.
Absolutely.
Through the whole tournament, pretty
much. Every round mattered, even if you were in the basement.
Yeah.
You could still help your team.
Absolutely.
I really liked the format. I was very happy with how it went.
I did like it. The only thing I didn't like was that it potentially could go six rounds. that was a little bit of a bummer, but it didn't.
Yep.
Spoiler alert.
You're welcome.
All right, so round two. That was a long round one. But round two, I get paired up with Gaby, and that's a bummer because Gaby's been playing Circle for like almost as long as I've known him, and
he's good at it.
Yeah, and I'm relatively new to it, and frankly, a lot of me being a moderately competent Circle player pretty quickly comes from just watching him and seeing.
Basically, Daniel San is about to fight Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, yeah, and I, you know, we've talked about it a bunch, and we'd played it out once before that my Chromac list may give his Kaya list some trouble, but not. Otherwise, Gabe feels like his Kaya list can beat basically any list in Circle, and I tend to agree. His list, basically, Kaya has the passive plus two mat, so mat 8 stalkers that can just hit and run all game are really rough on Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I even think, like, you know, the power player list, like the Epic Morvana list and stuff, would have a lot of difficulty with it. Shooting is just not a thing against that list unless you ignore stealth, and that's not a thing Circle does. So, but anyway, so I dropped my Chromac, and my Chromac list is very battle group heavy. It is a Gorax, a Winter Argus, a Feral, a Stalker, and a Pureblood. Double Shrimp, Swamp Gobbers, Double Stones. So very similar list to my Kruger list, really, if you look at it. I mean, both lists have the Double Shrimps. No Blood Weavers. Instead, the Winter Argus is in there. I like that because the Winter Argus Animus is pretty baller on Kruger late game if he's going to go beast out. And it's a good little scenario
piece,
too.
On Chromac late game?
Did I say Kruger? Sorry, Chromac, yeah. So anyway, this is a really interesting game. Gabe screwed up his deployment of his stones, so he didn't get to double port his Pureblood forward. And basically his goal against Circle is to break one of the stones, and possibly if he can hit two, which he could have had he double ported, but one unit was out of formation, which we later realized, like, after the game, that technically that's not legal. You cannot deploy out of formation.
Yeah.
So he probably had to just bump one back, but we played it out that way. And we just started a peace trade where I primal the stalker and put him into his, you know, double ported him into his stalker, killed it, warpathed into his Pureblood, did like 10.
Mm-hmm.
That stalker just sat there for a turn, and then he killed it the next turn because primal, you know, you could basically ignore it for a turn. The scenario on this one was probably one of the deciding factors, and I still feel like I could have gotten up on CP. Like, I wasn't going to win on scenario, but I could have gotten up on CP and maybe forced him to throw more shit in the zone than he wanted to.
Yeah.
But it was the what is that new scenario called? It's the horizontal zone with the two flags, and if you object or if you dominate a flag, you pull a point from your opponent.
Oh yeah, everybody calls it a non-scenario. I don't know the name of it, but yeah, I think everybody knows the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
The only one where you can erase scenario points.
Basically, Chromac as the game went along was casting Bastille because Gabe's list has druids in it, and I don't want my beast just yanked across the table. So, casting Bastille and basically creeping into that zone and eventually started dominating the zone or attempting to dominate the zone. But he had tough blood trackers in there, and it was a choice between blow out all these blood trackers and then take it to the face and, like, lose a beast or try to get his beasts. And, but yeah, you know, it's the game's kind of a blur, to be honest with you. It was a very tight game. Basically, it came down to I primaled a feral, put the feral in, and killed his second stalker. So he was down to, I had a feral, he had a pure blood. And he basically, and I, so Chromac was on four transfers in the zone, did not cast Bastille. He got the Pure Blood in, and because of that Mat 8, Pure Blood was just like, Feral, die. And that doesn't normally happen. Like, a Pure Blood can't kill a Feral. A Mat 6, Pal 14, Pure Blood cannot kill a Feral Werewolf in one turn.
Yeah.
It's you need some spiky dice to do that.
Yeah.
But when you don't have to boost a hit, and you know, as long as you can roll the sixes, which he did,
yeah.
He killed the Feral. And so there goes my transfer target. So all mm-hmm. I could do with that Fury was beast out.
Which you did.
Yeah, and I had like 8 hit points on me.
I remember walking up when this was happening.
Yeah, and then he walks up, he gets Kaya up, and he... and a couple Blood Tracker throws hit me and took me down to like 5-ish or something like that. And then he hit me with a boosted POW 12 or 11, whatever her Zot spell is. It's not Stranglehold, it's...
Spirit Fang?
Spirit Fang, yeah, which is a good spell. She got up there and Spirit Fang me to death. And, you know, we mapped it out, and it was like, well, she needs like an 8 to hit or 9 to hit because I'm a death 15.
There was a wall involved in this, too.
Wall was
it wasn't involved
factor.
In the spell?
No. No, she got her
You were definitely
wall.
Near one.
I was. Unfortunately, I was on the wrong side of it.
Okay.
It was like diagonal across the corner of the zone on his side. It was pretty hard for me to get on the other side of it without being like, hey, Pure Blood, come kill me. So it was like a choice between Pure Blood kill me or Kaya try to kill me. I think I made the right call. But ultimately, yeah, he felt like I had more stuff in the zone at that point, and he was afraid of getting dice down. So he was like, I'm just going to fucking kill him. And he came in, and he needed a 9 to hit boosted, and then he had a POW, I want to say a POW 12 spell. So I think he had to do about... Maybe I had like 4 left, 3 left. So he had to roll like an 8 or 9 on 3 dice. So he had to basically do that twice. So, you know, getting kind of coin flippy on that assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Had that not happened, she was just super fucking dead. Because I could have cut for enough to just go chop her head off. But
yeah,
it was a really good game. And frankly, one of the closer than I would expect. Because he's just such a good circle player. And I'm getting there, but I mean, he's...
He's top-notch.
Yeah, he's legit. And frankly, you know, him and I have different styles, so it was an interesting contrast of styles. He's always sort of trying to rope-a-dope me in, and I'm always fighting the urge to oblige him. You know, that's sort of
That's how he plays me, too.
Yeah, that's how he plays everybody. If you're aggressive, he's going to try to use it against you. But sometimes you can use his passiveness against him, and I probably should have...
Giving it away right now.
I had a couple weird moments where I was like, "Oh, let me rift my own stone in the zone, and then you know, catch 4 blood trackers and like don't kill a single one." You know, shit like that. Like a couple weird things like that happened where his tough blood trackers were like fucking unkillable, and where if I killed enough of them, then maybe I commit more. But I mean, I think I killed 2 like the whole game, and shrimp don't love blood trackers. That's a tough fucking thing for them to handle. So. Stealth range units are not typically what Chromac wants to see. He wants to see, if you got stealth infantry, he wants them to be melee so you're forced to come into him and then the stalker goes and gets you, you know what I mean? But, so, you know, learned some stuff. I wish the scenario had been a little bit more alive. I think I that would have made more of a difference, but I mean, you know, awesome game, awesome opponent. You know, he's the shit. I mean, he's arguably, you know, there's... Like, our meta has a bunch of guys who are, like, on a very similar level. And Gabe is you can make the argument that Gabe is probably, like, a hair's above the rest of us.
Yeah.
So, even in just...
I think Gabe is an undeveloped talent because he doesn't, you know, he's always had, like, weekend jobs and stuff. And
yeah.
This is the first time he's ever been to a tournament this big. And he's only been... This is, like, his third tournament ever.
Yeah, and I've always felt that way about both Marshall and Gabe. I'm like, you guys are way too good at this game to have never played. Like, there was... Like, when I met them, they'd, like, literally never played in a tournament. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you go into RIW and give them, like, Chuck and Jake, like, legit games.
Yeah.
On a consistent basis where, like... You have chances to win those games, or you win those games.
Yeah, and I mean, have beat those guys.
Yeah, and then you've never played in a tournament. So you know, I finally, you know, getting them out to a big event was cool, and I think they both had a good time. And you know, obviously, like I said, it's that first 5-rounder experience. I mean, you and I have done that a little bit.
Marshall
more.
Was at the last Michigan Cup, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
He's up there a little bit.
That was a 5-rounder too.
I think
right?
so.
Yeah. So that was me. 1-1. But I felt comfortable like losing to Gabe. At least if I'm going to take a loss early, it's against a guy who's probably going to have pretty good strength of schedule. And you know, I was bummed that I got paired against a guy who was from our store. But it's sort of our fault for bringing a quarter to the field,
if you
right?
bring 9 guys, that's going to happen.
Yep.
So, speaking of being paired against somebody in your store, I drew Dreyer in round two, which I was not happy about at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Dreyer has been super hot in our store right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's been crushed. You know, he picked up Runes of War, a couple months ago, and he's been running rampant through the store with it. Basically, you know, our Crix player was out in boot camp and AIT and stuff, and Dreyer kind of ran wild on the store for a while. He's, yeah. I mean, and you know, I'm not saying that it's only because there was no Crix player, because Dreyer's a very good player.
No, but yeah,
Dreyer has been like bending our meta.
Yeah,
he's been doing so well.
We all went through a period where we were like,
how the fuck am I going to beat Runes of War? How am I going to do this?
Or how are we going to beat Troll Ultra Brick? Or how are we going to beat, you know,
the Madrak list with fucking Burrowers? Oh my god, I hate Burrowers.
Yeah,
gave him those Burrowers. You son of a bitch, Dreyer.
Yeah, mostly for me, it was like, with Circle, I was like, how do I beat Runes? And then that started. And that actually, like I said, that experience really helped in that first round against Hickok.
Yeah, it's nice when that prep pays off.
I'd seen it a bunch.
Because I know if I've prepped for tournaments, like, what one is my Crix matchup? And then I never see a Crix list.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm playing Ron again against Dreyer, who's playing Madrak, Epic Madrak, with Double Warders, Fenblades, Burrowers, and two lights, Impaler and
Slag.
And Slag, yeah.
That list is really fucking good. And it like hits you in waves.
Yep.
And each wave has Blood Fury on it, and it's...
But I know when I was looking at the two lists I was going to play, I'm looking at my Ron and my Assyria, and we've talked about both these lists, and I'm like, I don't feel comfortable with either one of these being able to handle two waves of warders after killing 12 Fenblades. I just don't think either one of them is going to be able to kill everything, so I got to try and run Ron and either try and push him around in the scenario or just kill him.
Yeah, I don't think that list loves strong control elements, and not that Ron is like a... I mean, he's a control caster, but
he doesn't have Kruger 2's feet.
No. Yeah.
So that's what it comes down to. I'm going first. I got my advanced deployed archers out there. Dreyer's setting up, and he sees those archers towing the advanced deployment line, which is not normal for them. But I'm projecting AoEs pretty far into the board. He knows they snipe 16, and they're up 13 already.
Yeah.
And they move another 5. So, you know, he mathed it out, and he's like, I can't really move these guys anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think I can even scatter into his deploy.
Definitely into his 80 line.
Yeah, which is where his Burrowers are going to be.
Yep.
So... He's being cute and spreading those Burrowers out. He's like, you're not gonna rook me on this one. And he spreads his Burrowers out really far.
Right.
And I'm already getting upset about Burrowers. I know what they can do to anything they want in my list, and I don't really have a way to deny them. I don't have any kind of covering fire template or anything like that.
Right.
I don't have anything to terrify them, you know, to take advantage of their only real weakness.
Yeah, yeah, that is definitely.
I have a couple of hard targets that are perfect for them to kill.
Yeah.
You know, I have a Colossal in my list.
I mean, they can't charge the Hyperion, but still,
they can't charge the Hyperion, but charging isn't what does the damage on those guys.
Yeah, well,
it's the POW 14 gun.
I mean, the POW 8 with 4 dice is not terrible either.
It's not awful, but still.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with it. I don't want it being behind my front line.
No.
So I'm sitting here racking my brain while he's carefully deploying these guys. And the way he deploys them actually is what led me to this. But he had his leader right on the deployment line, right smack in the middle. And then he made like a horseshoe at...
Yeah.
Almost max command on them.
Yeah.
And then there was a few sprinkled in there. They weren't like in a drum circle,
right,
but they were close.
Right,
there was a couple sprinkled in there. But in the like just the nipple of that boob is the freaking weird.
So did you tweak that nipple?
I tried as hard as I could. So I'm going first, and
you don't have to do it that hard.
One of the tier bonuses is both of my jacks. My Hyperion and my Phoenix get +2 speed on turn one. So I sprint Phoenix straight forward, full 16 inches, move Ron up, TK Phoenix forward, and TK his Burrower away from the rest of his unit. So just 2 inches directly toward me, putting it so like all but two of his guys are now going to be out of formation.
Yeah.
So there it will be no burrowing on turn one unless he wants to lose like seven of them off the bat.
Right, because they all have to be within five of the leader or whatever, or within command.
They all have to be in command. Anyone that isn't in command just is just gone.
Yeah, holy shit.
So I'm feeling like a genius right now, and Dreyer's like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's...
He just looks at me and he's like, you crazy fucking genius.
Yeah, that's some pro-ass shit right there.
And I'd never seen that before, and I don't know what made that come to me, but it did. I was just like, that guy... They're at the extremes of their command. I'm fucking... Well, I'm just going to put them all out of command.
Typically, I guess that with Burrowers, though, you put the dig model or the marker in base-to-base with the leader, right? So, because normally
the leader floats 5 inches, and then you put the...
Right. So, but in a normal unit, the leader would be, like, way back.
Yeah.
And then the unit would be sort of like a...
Do that with them, because he dictates where the rest of the cloud ends
up. Right, I see. Yeah. No, that's an interesting play. I got to remember that
So on his turn, they basically all just clumped up together in the deployment zone, because they had, they all have to come to the leader, and the leader kind of had to go back to them.
Yeah.
To get out of the way of the rest of his army.
Yeah.
Because they're all useless this turn.
Took them out of the game
for two turns, and that turned out to be all the game one, I think, is two, maybe top of three. Yeah, it must have been top of three. I went first. So
hashtag Ron.
Hashtag Ron. So he basically took his warders and took that Phoenix from me immediately. There was a turn in between there. He ran forward, I ran forward. For the rest of my first turn, he just sort of ran his stuff forward and got into positions to threaten what they wanted to threaten. I got this bright idea where I was going to take my Phoenix and force hammer some warders into each other, and they'd all be knocked down, and this would be awesome. And I knocked a couple of them down. I think I crit knocked a couple down with mittens or something. I don't remember how, but a couple of them were on their back. Yeah, Reveille, fuck it. I completely forgot about all that shit.
Yeah.
I also accounted for Ron having about 13 focus on that turn. So I'm like, I'm going to force hammer those three through the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to shoot a boosted gun from the Phoenix into this.
Yeah.
It's just, you know how you start to build a plan for a turn and you spend all your focus at the beginning of the plan?
And then
you're still making plans and you're like, yeah, Ron's got any focus, fuck.
You start gluing plans together in your head.
Yeah, you start executing one and then you finish executing a different plan.
I always basically just, I'm like, okay, my brain immediately is like, wild plan, assassinate them with double ports and this and that and these spells. And then I just go, I'm not going to math all that out whether I have the fury for that. I can almost guarantee if my wild imagination is coming up with this plan at the beginning of my turn, it probably isn't going to work. And I just like scale. I'm like, all right, what is the most direct, simple thing I can do? And that's almost always right for me. Cause I do the same thing like what you're talking about, where you just start like, you make up this like idea that you're going to just like kill half their army in attrition in one turn.
Well,
and then you start doing the math and you're like, oh, I have to activate this guy twice to do that.
And it's not even 13 exactly.
Right. It's not doable.
I'm going to need to use that arc node a couple times.
Yeah. And you're wasting like minutes of your clock trying to kind of come up with
this. I think my average start time with a Ron turn, like I allocate focus for about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Like my control phase is at least 90 seconds long.
And with War Machine, it's even more just like you can't make up stupid plans that you have to reject over and over again because you're like cooking all that clock.
Yeah, and I try to do that during my opponent's turn, but sometimes you don't get to.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, the top of my second turn, all I did was advance my board forward. I started shooting mittens and Stormfalls at Fenblades, and this one stupid Fenblade toughed like three times, and it hit me. I'm like, why am I trying to fucking kill this guy? He's got vengeance, and I'm only going to kill one of them, so I just stopped. This guy's just knocked down, and I'm like, all right, done. I'm not shooting at that guy anymore. Like, if I would have killed that guy and the next guy and the next guy and the next guy, then I'm at least I'm making bread.
Right.
But I've already spent three attacks to try and kill one guy, and he keeps toughing. Thank you for toughing to save me from my own fucking stupidity. So I ended up not having to deal with those Fenblades so much. He also, he deployed in a way that he had like one of those pain in the ass Games Workshop hills, and his Fenblades are, they're light plastic and they're just sliding down the back of it.
Yeah.
So it turned out like his Fenblades were really strung out far, like front to back. They weren't spread wide. They were like a column of like four guys, then four guys, then four guys.
Hmm.
So I didn't have to deal with them, luckily, very much. There was the front four all I had to deal with.
Well, and he's baiting you. He's baiting vengeance there. He's trying to give you enough where it's like,
Yeah, they mini feet and come into me, and they're a pain.
Yep. Well, and then they get Blood Fury too.
Right. So I didn't really do anything to those Fen Blades. I didn't kill hardly anything on that second turn. All I did was put my Phoenix in that position where I talked about knocking some stuff down. He immediately revelies and murders my Phoenix with one warder, or maybe two.
Yeah,
it wasn't much. I think it was more two. Than
that. Well, Blood Fury, yeah.
Yeah, well, they had Blood Fury.
Okay, never mind.
Don't worry. And then I don't know. He blew it up for nothing. It advanced his board, so we're getting close to a point where, you know, I was out of his charge ranges because those guys are thankfully slow. And he had a cloud of just, you know, two units of warders and Fen Blades in front of it, and his two lights and Madrak. Now he was considering run feet on this turn. I could see that he was doing that because he reveled his Fen Blades and stuff, and he ran a few of them into me. So I've got some Fen Blades engaging Mittens, but he didn't feel like he got enough of my army engaged to warrant feeding.
Yeah,
but he didn't find that out until he'd already advanced Madrak to a situation where he's, like, measuring control area to see what he's getting. So some of those Fen Blades have extended beyond that 10 inches.
And he's pretty up the field at this point, then, I imagine.
He's kind of up
Madrak,
there.
Madrak pretty much lives in the mid line.
Yeah, he can when he's got that Grim whatever,
yeah,
Grim
I mean,
Salvation.
Yeah, he's just super hard to kill.
Yeah. So he's up there, and he's like, oh, he sees he's not going to get what he wanted with the feet, so he decides he's going to wait. And he's like, well, while I'm up here, I'm going to chuck an axe into Hyperion and do, I don't know, like, 30 damage or whatever that axe did. I don't know. It did a lot. Yeah, it wasn't 30, obviously, but it was like 12 or 14 damage or something.
Pal 16, so...
he hammered him in the face. And he'll tell you, like, I've heard him retell how this game went, and that's the point he keeps going. He's like, I was just like, fuck it. Throw this axe. Cast snipe. Because he sniped him to do it, obviously. And that was... he gave me an exact measurement, which was nice. And B, that measurement had to be less than 12 inches from some serious threats. So I was happy to see how close he was. I decided to feed. I had to knock down probably 10 medium base models to get what I wanted. He had his Slag Troll right in front of Madrak, probably less than an inch in front of him. So I was able to force hammer with, and I had to commit Ron to do this because my Phoenix, as you know, is a corpse.
Yeah. So Ron had to
shimmy around the Hyperion to get a force hammer line, and he had to use the feet extension to get it.
So what is that? Does that make it 12 or 10?
It makes it 10. It's 8 to 10,
gotcha.
I believe.
Yeah, it sounds right.
Actually, TK is 8. Maybe force hammer is 10 to 12.
It's possible. Yeah,
I don't know, either one.
Offensive spells are
I'm at a point where if this doesn't work, I'm going to die.
Yeah, right.
There's no
right.
doubt about it. So I'm sitting here trying to kill warders. God knows why. I guess I wasn't really trying to kill warders. I was trying to move them out of the way.
Right,
with,
knock them
down. You know, 12 mitten activations. I also did the force push that targets a model in your battle group and pushes everything away 4 inches, mm-hmm. which is a very rarely used spell, I think, on Ron.
I think it's super good for scenario, like removing... It's almost like...
It's same as Repulse, basically,
inches. It's better than Repulse, yeah, but it's...
So I did that on good. Hyperion, and that's what allowed me to move Hyperion forward enough.
Nice.
And really move my mittens and everything forward enough.
Yeah, right.
So that was like the first thing Ron did was push everything off of Hyperion. Because remember, he ran all his stuff thinking he was going to get what he wanted with a feat.
Yeah, yeah.
So that made some space for the mittens to operate. They pushed and knocked down enough stuff that I got aligned to Madrak and knocked him down with the slam. So Madrak's on his back. He's got, I don't know, 2 focus. And he's got probably, I think we figured out 2 Grim Salvation targets.
Yeah.
So he's already taking care of 4 of my attacks.
Yeah, yeah. You basically at this point need minimum like 6 attacks, probably more.
A few mittens got to hit him, and moved him around. And I think they just, you know, doing 1 point of damage is the same as doing 100 points of damage when a Grim Salvation target's there. Because if he takes damage, he has to do it to the Salvation guy.
Yeah. Is Grim Salvation, does it work on spells? I don't recall.
You know what? No, it doesn't. So maybe you know what? I was sitting there bouncing back and forth. I think I just killed the Salvation targets instead.
Yeah.
I know I used the last few mitten attacks to clean out some of those guys.
Okay, yeah. I can't remember, honestly, but I think
I'm pretty sure you're right.
I'm
pretty sure you're right. So either way, the mittens I know impacted those Grim Salvation targets. They must have been killing them or pulling them out of range of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once we determined, you know, he and I both agreed, there's nothing within an inch of this guy. This looks cool. I'm going to leave him where he's at. Then come 2 full units of Stormfalls, shooting Brutals at him that are basically auto-hitting.
Oh, yeah, God.
Or not two full. There was six or seven. One, at least one of them was dead.
That's a lot.
Brutal shots are hitting him hard. I think I didn't exceed armor on a couple of them. But either way, what it came down to is we got to the fully loaded, or not fully loaded, I think one focus, Hyperion, who hit him with a storm, the big cannon, and I don't know, two shots from the nipple gun, and that put him away.
Nice. Did he tough?
I think he toughed once, maybe.
Yeah. So, like, I usually am like, when you're going after a troll,
it was coming down to he had to tough like three times in a row to live.
Yeah, right. That's what and that's the situation you want. You just want a redundancy of small attacks at the end to make sure you finish them. Or small. When I say small, I mean like POW 12 plus, since they're like armor bajillion all the time.
But, yeah, and I mean we were talking, you know, last podcast I was talking cool as a cucumber in tournaments and all that. Things were getting tense in there. And Dryer, I'll tell you, my hands were definitely trembling a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Part of it was there was about 26 seconds left on my clock when I killed him.
Yeah.
And part of it was the pressure of the situation. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can tell you, with all honesty, I didn't feel worried, because it's like I expected to lose that game when they said, you know, table six,
yeah,
me and Dryer. But, yeah, it was a super intense game, and I was glad I was able to steal it. I felt like I stole it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, I mean, he may have gotten a little over-aggressive, and that's, you know, when you play Madrak, he has to impact the game. But yeah, the moving up and not using the feed, or not being able to use the feed, and just falling a little short, and then not having probably enough Grim Salvation targets in play was kind of a deal, so. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, he doesn't give up a lot of cast. Like, I rarely do I kill his caster. I think the only time
he's usually pretty conservative with, or at least, like,
yeah,
good about keeping a lot of Grim Salvation targets.
It's usually like the entire Krillstone just around the dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, probably the most luck I've had killing his caster has been, like, when you play Kalandra. And that's because Kalandra just fucking dies to a lot of shit.
Yeah, she's easy to kill.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Cool. All right.
So basically, at the end of round two, my team went 1-2. Dan won his game, and I don't recall who he played, to be honest with you.
I don't know.
So we're 1-2 at that point. In that round, which is a little bit of a bummer. But our two losses are obviously to you guys, so you guys are now 6-0.
Yeah, we're 6-0, plus the painting point has us in first place,
yeah,
in which I was notified by the TO.
At that point, two rounds in, yeah. So, all right, so round three, I got paired up against our buddy JLF, obviously a member of the cast, and he was playing the list he was talking about last podcast, and he ended up dropping Borka. And when I saw trolls, I pretty much was just like, yeah, Kruger. Especially his trolls, which are, you know, we talked about on that cast, but his weaknesses in his list were speed and scenario. And this particular scenario was fire support. Fire support is a very live scenario for Kruger.
Mm-hmm.
He did win the role to go first, which he took because he felt like I was going to just really get up on scenario on him, but going second's not terrible either because you get to score first, right?
Mm-hmm.
So really what happened, basically he said, I'm going to go first. And I look at the table and there's a big chunky kind of obstruction right outside of his deployment zone lined up with his flag. You know, his flag being the one with that as his objective.
Behind. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, you're taking that side. So he pre-deploys his Mountain King and jams all his warriors around it in Borka and goes. So, after he goes, he's like running his Mauler and one unit of warriors sort of towards that flag. He is a good, I'm trying to think of what the measurement would be. He looks like if he runs the warriors again next turn, he will put one or two warriors in the zone, and that's all he's going to be able to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I take my first turn, just move up pretty aggressively, get all my stuff in stones in case he really comes up on me. Although, his list is so slow, it's like, my threat, my second turn threat is like not long enough to get to where he's going to end up because he's, you know what I mean?
Because
he's so slow, yeah. Mountain King walks, or I don't remember what Mountain King does, but basically Mountain King goes at the left side flag, which is mine, as my objective behind it. And the one group of warders and one, you kind of just split the list basically, and the Borka was sort of just
hilling. That's kind of what he has to do.
Yeah, and the Iron Flesh went on the warders that were on his flag side, the side that I feel like I'm going to be able to score on, right? So, basically what ends up happening is on my second turn, I go in for attrition, and I brain fart a little bit. I do some dumb things like I sprint Getterix, put him into kill two warders. And I'm like, Getterix can kill two warders, I feel like.
Seems like he should be able to.
Yeah, and this is on the left side flag. Well, I also get him engaged by the Mountain King because I'm a dipshit. I'm like, cool, I kill a warder. And then I'm like, well, I can stand here and die, or I can back up and die. So I decide to sprint, and then he basically whiffs both free strikes pretty bad and doesn't kill him. But Getterix is still not that far
Poor
away.
Jay.
Yeah. And actually, you know what? I'm jumping ahead. Just, ugh. All right, fuck that part.
That's fine.
Basically, what I ended up doing was on my turn two, my unit of shrimps on that side blows out his objective. Just says, what the hell?
The combined fire, whatever it's called.
It's concentrated fire. Concentrated fire, thank you. I can't think tonight. Concentrated fire blows objective off the table. I get Kruger in there. I get a Warp Wolf in, trying to kill Iron Flesh warders.
Yeah.
There's two warders in there. One warder in there, sorry. I put a Pure Blood Spray, you know, fully boosted Pure Blood Spray with the Animus up, so the Iron Flesh didn't matter.
Yep.
I put a Stalker who spent 4 Fury.
Uh-huh.
And I could not kill that fucking warder.
Just one warder.
Didn't even get to a tough check. Just sitting there in armor 21, just middle finger. Death 15, armor 21, just middle fingering me. I can't. My dice didn't go great. The dice on the objective were really hot. The dice on everything else, bad. So I get up there, and I TK the warder out. And I'm like, all right, well, this plan is completely blown, so I'm going to feat. And I feat. And push, you know, his stuff back. And then I TK Kruger to the flag. And now that his objective is dead, I scored.
You're dominating.
I dominate, right.
Nice.
So I got 2
seats. That's so far forward.
It's yeah.
Pretty safe against the list that he's playing.
Well, I'm on the midline, but his shit is now mostly at least a foot away from Kruger.
Yeah.
And I've got like 2 Warples standing in front of him because they were trying to kill one goddamn order and couldn't kill him, right? So... On the other side, he's got the Mountain King and some warders in there, and I've got Getterix lined up on it. And then, obviously, his turn is not that super productive. One mistake I think he made here is that he, under the feet, you're at that speed debuff.
Yeah.
He decides a lot of his warders, they just walk. And a couple of them get to, like, poke a thing or two.
Uh-huh.
Like, I jammed them with Blood Weavers a little bit, too, I just gave up on shifting stones and just used my shifting stones to just jam a little bit, like little piecemeal. Like here's one stone, here's you know, like and kind of keeping them in formation, but not giving them the whole unit at once. And really just sort of crowd controlled his list, which had like very few ways to remove those things. And
yeah, I think the only ranged attack he has is the spray from the Mountain King, right?
Yeah, and Borka's bomb.
Yeah.
So anyway, he gets into a situation where he should have ran the warders back in the zone and he didn't. And he committed pretty softly by only walking a couple. So I got the next turn, I got to clear it again and score again.
Ugh.
And then on the other side, the Mountain King is just like ruining everything. I discussed about Getterix. This is the turn I do it. I put Getterix in, screw up, get Getterix killed essentially. But I've still got my objective live and I've got some shrimp. And then now I've taken my Shifting Stone unit and double pinned, like put one at the front of the Mountain King and one on the side where that Mountain King is never going to move to the right until those stones are dead. And by any attacks he has that can remove them are putting a model in the Mountain King's path. So that Mountain King is just basically just going to sit on that flag the whole game pretty much. It might move, but like the fact that you can't end your movement on an incorporeal flag and my objective's there and then there's like stones and just random blood weavers
just
and shit.
No place for him to land.
Right. I just basically chaffed his landing area so badly that he really couldn't do much. So I'm trying to think of what else happened really.
Well, it sounds like the game's already at 4-0.
No, it was at 3-0 at this point.
Dominate's not 2? Didn't you just dominate 2 turns in a row?
Trying to think.
I think when I walked up to that game at the end, you were like... Six points was what.
I'll tell you what happened. Actually, this turn I did not dominate because I could not kill a warder. I could not kill.
Oh,
Iron
you
Flesh
put another
warders.
Iron Flesh
there
warder
was,
in there.
There was
that,
a point where
I put
4 Blood Weavers into the unit of Iron Flesh warders,
mm-hmm.
all So, and two, you know, two per model.
To try and dispel the Iron Flesh.
So mat 8, needing 7s a hit, and I whiff 4 7s. Then the next turn I had 2 chances at it, missed 2 more 7s. I never removed Iron Flesh from that unit. So, and he just kept recasting it.
Because
you don't upkeep it. You let it drop, let him move, then put it back on him.
Yeah.
Because of the speed debuff.
Yep.
So there was a turn I couldn't clear him, and that was really frustrating. And then I lost, like, a Stalker. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Because, I mean, and no offense to Jay, but, like, the list matchup and the scenario being so live, that game probably could have been over in, like, 3 rounds. Like, literally. Or on the 4th round, I win.
On the 4th round, yeah.
And it ended up going a little longer because troll resilience is troll resilience. And then Jay just kept, you know, taking my pieces away. The one thing I would say is that his list has so few attacks in it that are, like, low quality. Like, just running Bloodweavers in, or like stones, or like the stone
keeper. He's wasting high quality attacks to clear a stone.
I was just like, I'll just use this tree and put him right in the lane where two warders would cross to charge this warp wolf. I know what the fuck's going to kill it, right? And so he was dealing with stuff like that over and over again that was really giving him a lot of trouble. And I pretty much just, you know, it was basically just Bull and Matador, really. And frankly, had. You know, I made some bad calls. Like, I lost Getterish for no reason, and I probably screwed up one turn with my Stalker where I maybe could have cleared that zone in one scenario earlier. But, you know, had I played it perfectly, I feel like he's just so disadvantaged in that matchup with that scenario.
Yeah, it's a bad matchup.
And with that terrain piece on it. I mean, he just got kind of – he got shafted by the scenario and the terrain and the table.
Yeah, well, he took that first, and you flexed your going second advantage.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Kruger, I think, is just...
I remember seeing that table and thinking that's brutal.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't matter what turn he goes, because if I go first, I just take so much of the board that threat range keeps you away, and then if I go second, it just means I can score first using my feet. I mean, against Warders, his feet is basically Epic Denny feet, because Warders run 4 inches under his feet. So essentially, they get pushed back 3, so they get 1 inch of movement, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to him. He actually lost ground on the feet, because a lot of his guys, he just walked 2 for whatever reason. And
yeah.
I think in the moment, it probably made sense, but I think ultimately, not running to jam that scenario was the issue. But
yeah, it cost him in the end.
God forbid I didn't play him the round before on that other scenario. That would have been a much different game, because... Yeah. That one, Borka could have sat on his own flag, taking points from me, and he would have just jammed that zone with, like, Mountain King and dudes.
Yep.
Like, a narrower-facing scenario like that, ugh.
Yeah, you'd have been in trouble.
But, yeah, I knew immediately. I was like, I got to play Kruger, and I got to just scenario the shit out of him. So that was that. But he played, you know, he played as well as he could. It just was a disadvantaged situation, so.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you play against Kruger. Everything's a disadvantaged situation.
Well, especially when your list is mostly
your list doesn't have any guns.
Mostly speed 4 models, you know.
Yeah, it's brutal.
We'll talk about that later, though. Another round where I played a bunch of speed 4 models.
So my round 3 is against Colin, and he's playing Epic Haley, which I have no practice with.
Yeah,
I decided there was too much
problem,
too much infantry in that list to play Ron, and we're in round 3 of potentially 5 or 6 rounds. Probably a good time to drop my other list, which is
minimum 5 rounds, possibly 6 rounds.
It's the Assyria list we talked about in the previous podcast. It had 3 full units. It's got Invictors, Riflemen, Sentinels. It's got Ayana and Holt, and a Phoenix. I think that pretty much rounds it out. There's a thing in there, of course.
Yeah,
I think that's it.
That list has morphed enough that I'm like not familiar with the newest iteration.
I feel pretty confident that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's got a lot of attacks, and that's what I'm going to need against his Haley. Unless he's running Haley Stormwall, but he's still got Gun Mages, Black 13, and what are these Sword Knights?
Yeah.
13, 16 dudes.
Yeah, defensive line.
Oh, you know what else is in there? Mage Hunter Assassins are in there.
Yeah.
So our scenario, or our table, you know what scenario we're playing. Our table, the terrain isn't that crazy. There's kind of like a monolith rock, maybe the size of a CD or DVD on his side, right in front of his AD, which is going to be a nice nest for Haley.
Yeah.
There's not really. I don't remember who went first. But it doesn't really matter. Stormwall and Gun Mages are coming up one side, and Sword Knights and Thorn are coming up the other side.
Did he have a jack on the Sword Knights, like Marshall to him, or no?
No.
Okay.
Nope, he had Stormwall and Thorn, and that's it.
Using him as like a tarpon. Okay.
Yeah. And he had, what's the mechanic's name?
Arlen Strangeways.
Strangeways, yeah. And he's kind of supporting Thorn. All right, so he's camping out Haley behind this terrain feature in the middle of the table. He's got Stormwall and Gun Mages pressing up my left, and Sword Knights coming up my right. The Sword Knights are up against Invictors. Gun Mages are against Riflemen, and the Sentinels are kind of trying to threaten Stormwall, although the Stormwall's bonded and getting a temporal acceleration, so
yeah.
He can do whatever he wants, basically.
D-Cell against Red that don't have the Strike Force is pretty bad.
Yeah, D-Cell... You know, I don't even know if he used D-Cell in that matchup, to be honest.
Wow.
Maybe he did. Yeah, because I know I didn't shoot very many Gun Mages, man.
No.
But, yeah, basically the Gun Mages took apart the Riflemen.
Yeah, that's...
Badly.
That's pretty much what I was expecting you to say.
And,
it's kind of just a who shoots first on that one.
I wasn't really able to get... I wasn't really able to get my Sentinels on that Stormwall in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
But this also, and you know, this is something I've realized during my training for this, that killbox scenarios are so bad for Assyria. They just are.
Yeah, I mean, she's basically P7 and Rhett.
Yeah. But,
there's always that puncher's chance of just like, well, she's housing me, but I'll just kill her.
as we set up, I've already set my models on the table and declared I'm playing this list, and then I realize it's killbox and immediately regret it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I like the list against his list better, but just killbox against a bunch of freaking models that can shoot her is brutal.
You know what list I like against that list better? Is the original Assyria list that we wrote together with the Strike Force.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. So, long story short, I'm trying to threaten Haley, and there was a point in time where she kind of came out of her nest when she feeded to make sure she got all my army. And she kind of didn't go back. And I thought there was going to be a good chance to kill her with Ayana and Holt. I mean, Ayana got a crack at harming her.
Mm-hmm.
That's how close she was to my army. And I thought I was going to get a good run at her, but it didn't work out for me. Assyria ended up getting shot 4 times by Stormwall guns over 2 rounds.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there was some math issues, and we found out... Now, I realized halfway through the turn that his Stormwall shouldn't be getting aiming bonuses.
Yeah, because it was engaged.
Because it was engaged by some Sentinels that would have caused her to not take 11 or 12 damage. It kind of really ended up mattering.
That does matter.
When I'm shooting at Haley on the off turns here. So we're kind of both throwing haymakers at the other caster.
Yeah, right.
And he just got more of his to connect. But, cutting to the chase... I have to play her forward enough with killbox, and he's got a temporal acceleration.
Yeah,
taking 3 shots, Stormwall, and yeah.
No, it's
he got the better of her.
She's tough to screen without that Hyperion. I mean, there's a valid argument that Hyperion or Disco or something like one of those defensive pieces has to be in there. But that
I broke a rule I made for myself and did not drop her in killbox.
You know, it's hard to say that, too, because, like, you know, there's sometimes it's just a matchup where you're like, that's the matchup I want for Assyria.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's a lot of killbox scenarios. You know, it's not like it's like...
4 out of 12.
I thought it was, like, half or even more than half.
It's more than half in the Masters.
Oh, all right. Well, we can look that up later.
I'm pretty sure it's 4 out of 12, right, but whatever. But
yeah.
Either way, you're right. It's a significant number,
yeah.
And you don't want to have to have that hard... You don't want to make too many rules where I can only drop this list against these factions and these scenarios.
Right.
It kind of gets tough.
At that point, you're just like, why not just play different casters?
Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, I think there you just have to build a list where there's something to protect her. And that sucks because it usually means you're removing some of her attrition power a little bit. But
yep.
So
round 4.
All right. So we're both now 2-1.
Yes, I'm 2-1.
And this was not a good round for you guys.
No,
you
we
guys.
Went 0-3 in that round and fell to second place.
And then I won, Dan won, and I want to say Dreyer won this round.
Dreyer. I think he might have lost, actually. I think he might have started one and two.
Yeah, that's possible.
And then one out.
Okay. Yeah, that might have been it. So,
our teams, well, my team and your team went 0-6 in that round.
Yeah, and your team was.
Dan won.
Dan won, yeah.
So 1-5 in that round. Ugh.
No, I won in that round too. I beat Jay. Remember?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's...
No, I'm saying my team did well. Yeah, your team did well. Not. Yeah.
Ours took a dump.
So your team was teamless build. My team was Mulg's
meaningful
Bohawks, which is just a conglomeration of in jokes. So I won't bother explaining.
For the record,
it.
I'm not vain enough to name my team after myself. That was my other two players.
They came up with that.
Yes.
So round four was a little bit of a bummer. I'm not going to dwell on it too much, but basically what happened was I played Merlin, which no bummer playing that dude.
Merlin is like the most gracious, coolest dude ever.
Merlin's basically, I love playing that Merlin, guy. Like our whole meta has a huge Merlin man crush at this point. I was talking to him on Twitter about it. I was like, dude, everybody loves you. He's just a bro. He's just a cool guy. His team name was fucking Riders of Brohan, which is like one of the best team names. That might have been the best team name there, actually. But
you didn't like Chuck's team?
Yeah, Chuck's team was all right. So
we won't even give him the credit. We won't say it.
Yeah, and we'll get into it later. But the basically what happened was we were playing. What was the name of that? Dude, I can't remember a word.
I don't know what the scenario was.
It's the two long zones with the objectives in them.
Yeah, the two long zones with the the center objectives.
I want to say divide and conquer. That is not.
I don't know what it is.
That is not even a scenario.
Whatever. Everybody knows that scenario. It's the one where you got to kill the
process
objective
of elimination.
There you go. All
right, so we're playing process, which is a very live scenario. We have two scenario casters because I'm like, oh, Signar, I'm going to drop Kruger too. He's playing Haley. His Haley list is a very melee centric Haley. It's got like Storm Blades. It's got the Hammer Dwarves. It does have Tempest Blazers, which were a huge pain in my ass.
Mm-hmm.
He's got Alexi and the Risen, and then, you know, all your awesome Merc shit, Gorman,
yep.
And he's got a Thorn in there. So there's kind of, like, that's been,
yeah,
it used to be,
was
like,
only Jack.
It used
everything
to be,
else
like,
was infantry.
Haley, Stormwall, lots of guns was a list.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, Haley, double Stormwall, if you want to, like, that kind of skew, which is not a terrible list either. And then, more recently, you've seen a lot of guys being, like,
Melee Haley.
Haley with a significant amount of mercs, melee shit, and just Thorn. And as more of a spell slinger.
Sword, or not knights, the storm gunners.
He had storm blades,
the
11 point boat of 11 models.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, and he has Firbling Captain and, you know, fucking Rupert. I mean, he had like all the solos, right?
Yep.
So basically, he got, I rolled and wanted to go first against Haley, you take it, even though the scenario is not good to go first on in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I get up there as aggressively as I can. I take probably like a 5-minute turn. You know, it's first turn, right? So get my stones and play it, you know, make sure I'm threatening properly. He starts asking me like about threat ranges and stuff. And that's why I know I'm like, he's really thinking about like how deep he can get in these zones with like the Tempest Blazers and stuff. He takes his turn, gets in there, and he decides to top of 1 feet on me. And the reason he did that, oh shit, maybe I fucked up. You know what? I think it was a top of 1 feet. He feeded early, yeah. It was top of 1 feet. So so he got all his stuff up and feeded on me. He may correct me on this, but it ultimately kind of doesn't matter. Feeds on me, Tempest Blazers, Electro Leap a shitload off of my pure blood and kill a bunch of my like Blood Weavers and stuff. So my Blood Weaver unit's looking a little haggard. Lost a couple shrimps on that side. But that's about it.
Yep.
So now it's my turn, and it's his
turn. Which is also known as his turn part two.
Right. So the clock is paused for a lot of this turn, right?
Yep.
Because he's basically telling me what to do,
yep.
And then I turn the clock on, and then I got a couple units to activate afterwards. So I actually used the full 10-minute turn plus pauses while he was picking shit.
Yep.
So there was definitely, like, it was probably a bit of a turn, right?
Probably like 13 minutes.
Yeah, and I think I'm actually just to backpedal. I think he went first. I went second. He feeded on top of two. I think is how this went.
And then so we're talking bottom of two now.
I think so. Yeah, I could have that wrong still, but anyway. And he kills an objective on his turn, so it must have been He must be killing an objective on top of two. He wants to win second then. Okay.
Yeah.
So he kills an objective by...
So we're looking at top of three,
I think. What he killed it with? Epis Blazers, maybe? Epis Blazers, I think.
Hammer Doors?
No, that was the other side.
Okay.
And that's why I'm not even getting into like the models too much. It doesn't really matter here, because basically he feeds on me, I take this long-ass turn. At the end of, you know, towards the end of that turn, Kruger moves up and feeds on him. Basically, he can't do shit, but he does kill the second objective. So he's got...
Two points now,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That was... Yeah, I did go first. That was...
He must have had the bottom of the turn, or he couldn't kill the objective on the second turn.
Yeah, yeah. So that was my...
That was your top of three, his bottom of three kills the second objective.
Right. Clock comes back to me now, and
so top of four.
Right, and keep in mind, on my feet, I pause the clock while he's moving the models, and basically the way I do my Kruger feed is I've got the straight line laser,
mm-hmm.
you know, the one that projects a line on the table, like we buy from Harbor Freight. And I just put it on the model, and I'm like, that guy. And he moves him 3 inches. That guy. And I do it very quickly. So there's really no point in, like, pausing and unpausing the clock, because probably as far as my time, I'm using, like, 15 seconds total to move his entire army, because the rest of it is just him moving models, which I pause my clock for, right? Which is what I've been told by numerous players, that's the way you're supposed to play Kruger's feet on time turns.
Yep.
If anybody, you know, thinks that's an etiquette breach, let me know. But that's what I've had a lot of savvy players tell me. So, because the other guy's moving his own models, essentially. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, do all that, which is not on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Take the rest of my turn, which obviously this is like a turn where he feeded on me, I feeded. So this turn is long.
Yeah.
Right? We're talking like a solid, probably 15 actual minutes of clock, or of turn, 10 minutes of clock.
This is the top of four now?
No, this is still top of... This is the top of three.
Okay, yeah.
And he goes... he's feeding on. He comes up, you know, hammer dwarves, a couple hammer dwarves, punch Getarix, but... And then he's been blinding this pure blood all game. He blinds the pure blood again.
Yep.
Takes probably a full turn, maybe with an extension too. So this has been a bunch of long turns in a row. It switches to me, and at this point I've killed one hammer dwarf, and he's killed... the unit of blood weavers with electro leaps and like a shrimp or two.
Mm-hmm.
And we get dice down.
Mm-hmm.
So neither of us got to take a fourth turn of a tournament game. And now, understandably, there was some pausing that we talked about. Although our first, so you could say like our first turns probably were not 5 minute turns or not full 10 minute turns, but mm-hmm. then we went longer than 10 minutes on the other turns.
Yeah.
That still does not add up to 85 minutes, which is the minimum a 50-point game can be in SR.
Yeah.
And what we realized later was the TO probably started the clock when we were deploying, which is not supposed to be done, or just miscalculated the minutes. But that round probably was like an hour and 5 minutes was my guess, something like that.
Yeah, and there was some clamoring from several tables that were that way. And my turn or my round description will sort of reflect that.
Basically, you know, I'm not like – I don't – you know. Mistakes happen, and it won't happen again, I'm sure. But that round was way too short, and I killed a Hammerdorf. So there we go, 2-2.
Good game.
I'm not going to lie, I was actually pretty frustrated because I was about to clear, like the second, the right side zone, I was going to clear it and dominate it for two and make the game even at least. And then, mm-hmm. Then we would have like a game at that point, right?
Yeah.
But we didn't really get to play a game. And it was a bummer because Merlin's an awesome dude and he's a good player. And he was setting himself up for pretty good success in that game. And I was curious to see if I could play out of it. But,
you know. Yeah, no, it sucks when it goes down that way. And, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. It's not supposed to go down that way. It can't. It just did. And it's, you know, it's something that I'm sure, like I said, that they'll pay more attention to.
And yeah, no, and the dudes that were running the tournament did an awesome job with everything. So it, I don't want to, you know.
No, I'm not.
Mar how well that event ran.
I am absolutely awesome. Yeah, McKibben and Cliff are rad dudes. I think they were probably in the interest of trying to get us out of there because they're afraid of it going six rounds. They probably were shortcutting the clock a little, like while we're deploying and stuff, and it just kind of bit us in the ass a little that round.
Yeah, so. I suppose I should point out I was the pair down in that game against Colin that I managed to get shot off the table with.
So you're
welcome, everyone. We're playing five rounds now.
So anyway, that's my four. Not too much.
So my four.
One hammer door.
I'm playing on the table that has a fair amount of chunky terrain in and around the AD area. I'm playing against Stokes. He is playing Denny 2, Tier 4. Yep. And I'm playing Assyria again just because I see so much stuff over there. And Assyria was always the plan for Krix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that seems smart.
Now, I did something that's kind of unconventional against E-Denny in that I told him to go first even though I won the die roll. That was because the terrain was such that I didn't feel like I could possibly deploy three 12-man units across that board and move them forward properly with the terrain the way it was.
Yeah.
If I didn't get to pick the side that I needed. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure that he would have given me the bad side, because he was kind of already unpacking his models and stuff, but I couldn't take the chance.
No, and frankly, I'd have to see that table, but I just, out of experience against E-Denny, I just instantly disagree with that assessment. Like, yeah. I don't care if you've only got 2 feet of width, I still don't think that's a good decision. But I didn't see the table, and I understand your list is a lot of dudes that need space because they've got guns and they don't have high armor, so they need to spread out.
Yeah.
But still, letting E-Denny go first is brutal.
I hated it the whole time.
Yeah, I mean,
He did exactly what you would think after what I just described. We played in my advanced deployment zone.
Yeah,
and
right.
He was kicking the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, he kind of ignored the objectives on the top of three.
Yeah.
And he put me in a situation where his top of three, he could have killed both objectives, and I wasn't even in the zones.
You can't kill both. But yeah,
well, yeah, I'm sorry. He could have killed either. His choice of the objectives.
Right. He had dealer's choice on the scenario, basically. Yeah.
He had them all day. He didn't get to. He was playing a huge model count list, and he told me afterward he hadn't practiced the list very much. He'd only played it a few times.
This is that one where you get to put the upkeeps out on your shit.
Yes.
Your shit being like the opponent's.
But he's
shit.
Playing like two full units of Mechanithralls and two full units of the Cephalix 10-man, and the Cephalix 3-man were in there.
Yeah.
Overlord. It was a mess. There was tons and tons of models, lots of recursion, so he's eating up part of his own turn that way.
Mm-hmm.
More Mechanithralls and charging them around and stuff.
A lot of models to handle.
Yes. He's probably running 50 models in that list.
Yeah.
And He got to a point in his third turn. He had to extend in the second turn, which is the turn he feeded on me and locked me down. And he ran out of time in his third turn, never even activated Denny. Just standing in the middle of the table, not in corp, full camp. And I my whole army is being vanguarded by a Phoenix that's like towed up to a Deathjack. And I felt like he's kicking the shit out of me. He could take scenario points anytime he wants. I need to try and kill Denny, and I saw a chance to do so. I just combusted with Phoenix, cleaned out a ton of his chaff. They all died. There was none of the tough stuff. One of the Cephalix units is tough. The 10-man is...
The Drudge Slaves are tough.
The Drudges are tough.
Yeah. Mechanithralls
so it was all Mechanithralls that we cleaned out.
Yep.
Ended up getting 4 Crusader Call, feated, Sentinel charges at Denny. One of them died to a free strike on the way in. So 3 charges with them on a fully camped Denny. She's defense 15?
16.
And I'm at 7? Yeah, because I needed 9s on signs importance rolls.
Yep.
I landed 2 out of 3.
That's I mean, almost average. Like, you're at like 50-something percent.
Well, and that's fine. Probably. And now I'll tell you, she's armor 21, and I'm pal 12 weapon master signs importance, and I overkilled her by about 3 on those 2 hits.
Nice.
One of them was like 6-6-5-5-3 or something, and take away the 3.
Am I doing that? Minus 9, right?
It's minus 9.
Yeah.
So and I did minus like 9, 18 or 19 damage to her.
Minus 9 on regular dice would be 5 damage each.
Yeah.
And then signs importance dice.
Puts it up to 7-ish.
Yeah, or 12.
It.
Right.
I spiked it hard. I shook his hand afterward, and I apologized for dicing the shit out of him and stealing that game.
Yeah.
And then... I don't know, maybe 30 seconds after we shook our hands that round ended.
Yeah.
So
you guys were in round 3.
He would have crushed me on every tiebreaker. He didn't kill any scenario points, but he had stuff in the zones. I never even got to the zones.
Generally speaking, if you have a table advantage like that, just if you're closer than your opponent, you're going to win on dice down regardless of whether it's CV or whatever. But
yeah.
But you never know. Sometimes you're like, oh, I got a unit in there, and then there's like one dude out, and you're like, oh, shit, that doesn't count, all right?
Yeah.
You know, like, and you start, like, the tiebreaks get weird at that point.
Yeah, well, if I have 0 points in any tiebreaker at all,
yeah,
all right. The tiebreakers across the board would have been zeros
yeah.
for me.
Yeah, when it goes down to the tiebreaker, it's like, stuff left on the table, doubled in zones, and that yeah. then it gets weird. Yeah,
he would have smoked me for sure.
All right.
So, I definitely lucked out to get a win in that round.
Yeah, well, I still feel like, you know, maybe a lesson learned on that whole giving Denny...
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You just can't
I guess I wouldn't have done it the same way if I got another chance today.
You just can't. It's like you're literally asking, especially in a scenario like an incursion or something. I mean, you're just going to fucking lose. Like, you just literally, you cannot win.
No, there was no way for me to get out of that.
Yeah, so.
All right, so round five.
Okay, so round five, I'm in the 2-2 bracket now. Guy I played was a local dude named Kev. Does he go by Kev or Kevin? I can't remember.
Debler? I don't know what he goes by.
Nah, we'll call him Kevin.
I always called him Debler.
Yeah. Yeah, last name Debler. That's what most people call him. But he was playing a Seraphorge list. He was playing Gorton, who's an awesome caster, in my opinion. Earthbreaker and Hammer Dwarves. And he had, you know, it was a Seraphorge, so he had the super long deployment zone.
Yep.
I got to go first, and it was the mosh boobs scenario.
mosh boobs or mosh balls?
It was mosh boobs. And basically, which mosh boobs now has two objectives
mm-hmm.
that you can...
In the cleavage?
Yeah, in the cleavage, right. So, I dropped Kruger, too, because Earthbreaker scared the shit out of me. And I'm like, well, this Earthbreaker's never going to knock down anything unless he walks... You know, unless I give him something within 11, because he can walk 4 and then shoot the knockdown gun, I think 7, or maybe it's 5 under Stormwall. But basically, I'm just casting Stormwall every turn.
Yeah,
I think it might be 5. So it's like, do I put a Whirlpool for the 9? No, you're fine. You're not going to knock him down. Or mm-hmm. any of my models with a 9, I should say, because he could direct hit my model, and then the AoE could clip the Whirlpool and knock him down. But
mm-hmm.
So that was like kind of the plan. And then I was like, I'm going to get 2, maybe 3 Alpha Strikes on his list. Because it's slow as ball, so I'm going to hit it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to feed on it, and then I'm going to hit it again. And then between just sort of TKs and, like, generic circle control stuff and just chaffing him with, like, stones and shit, I'm like, probably get a third one on him, and he's just, I'm just going to kill all of his shit. Like, that was, like, you know, no offense to him, but, like, when I saw, I'm like, he's pretty list disadvantaged.
It's kind of like what Jay's was, where the speed is going to be such a huge detriment to it.
Speed is a detriment, not only on scenario, but also just pure threat.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a driller, I think. But, you know, those jacks can still fucking die to, like, a Whirlwolf. You know, if I hit them first, they're probably going to, you know, I'm probably going to one round. And then the Earthbreaker without an armor buff. The one thing I was really scared of was his feet. Yanking all my shit in, and then him being like, Earthbreaker, knock it all down, and then I'm like, I'm in some trouble, right?
Yeah. Because
then his, like, 7.5... Oh, yeah, and he had Brunn and Lug, which are, like, 7.5-inch threat also. So, like, his whole list is, like, this 7.5-inch threat monster where if it hits you, you just die, but it's 7.5-inch threat, right?
Yeah.
Or 9-inch threat on the Hammer Dwarves, you know, stuff mm-hmm. like that. 9-inch threat on the Earthbreaker. Anyway, so, you know, I jockey around for position, and I got to go first, which was even bigger kick in the dick, and I basically get up there and just, you know, position my wolves and stones. He moves up and his list is so slow that he toes his zones a little bit. His caster is kind of in a weird spot, like on the right hand side, my right hand side, where like his heavies and his Earthbreaker on the left, and his caster is sort of to the right of the objective, which seems a little out of position. The main thing I'm looking at is his caster has no charge lane to come at my army because the objective's in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Not, and maybe my model's in his dwarves a little bit, but that shit could get moved. But I'm thinking, like, charge feet on my army, pull me in, trouble, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at him like, I don't see how that can happen. So he takes his next turn, and like I said, I've got, like, all my wolves and everything are, like, threatening now.
Yeah.
He shot his Earthquake gun a couple times under Stormwall, and I just sort of put the AoEs where I fucking wanted them, and it just didn't do anything. And then basically... he had a couple of the solos too. I don't remember what the fuck. The client guy, the Bokur, and then he also had it cliented on Gudrun, which I thought was kind of interesting. I hadn't seen that before.
Hmm.
The shrimp just kind of pecked at those guys the whole time. It was pretty nasty. Booker went down pretty quick, and then
your list seems tailor made to fight this list.
Yeah, it's just you know, it's just the way it is with Seer Force sometimes. I mean,
yep.
Osram would be a character I'd probably be more concerned with because he can snipe that Earthbreaker.
Yeah,
and you know other range units, but so he takes his turn. He's kind of adjusting around, trying to shoot me a little. Doesn't really work very well because of Stormwall. Pecks around at my pure blood and stuff on the other zone. And then as his turn's closing, he's got about like a minute or left or 30 seconds left. I'm looking at him. He hasn't activated Gordon left. And I'm like, I wonder what he's going to do with Gordon. And he's like, all right, Gordon's going to run. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he just runs Gordon back behind the objective and then to my left towards like the Earthbreaker and the Driller and all that shit, which are kind of clumped together in the zone.
Yeah.
And just runs him like forward, like around the objective and then at me. And I'm like, huh. So I'm, like, making plans to attrition this whole turn, and then all of a sudden at the very end of the turn, he's like, here's my caster. And I'm like, well, Getorix is in stones, and I can just get him right now. Yeah. I don't even need TK or anything.
Hmm.
So this is like, Primal Getorix, he's dead. You know, good game. Yeah. And I don't know if it was one of those, like, I've done that before.
He just didn't see the double port?
It wasn't even a double port. It was just a single port. It was just one of those deals where the last 30 seconds of your turn, you're like, oh, I don't know what to do with my caster.
It's one of those things where you don't know what to do, but you want to make sure you do something.
Yeah, he wasn't, like, fully clocked where he was like, oh, my God, I have 5 seconds. What do I do with my caster? Like, he had, like, a minute, but I still think he might have been feeling a little bit of pressure, like, what do I do with him? And then he might have glanced at the clock and been like, you know?
Yeah.
And I think his inclination was to shoot the pure blood with his gun or double barrel the pure blood or something, but instead he just decided to run back for board position. And it wasn't really a terrible move had he just ran like behind the Earthbreaker, but he ran like forward and next to it, and then it was like, well, here we go. And he was 13-21, yeah. And Getorix is Mat 9, Pal 21.
So,
I mean, it wasn't even the dicey. It was like a 90%er kind of thing.
Right.
So that was that, and that was the end of my tournament. And then I walked around. You know, that only took like 15, 20 minutes, so I just walked around and played Watch Machine for the rest of the tournament.
Cool. My round 5 was against the famous Merlin. We are both 3-1.
Yep.
He played Haley against me as well. After my last game against Haley, I decided to play a... No, I did... yeah, I played Ron. I played Ron.
You did play Ron.
Yeah. I wanted to... He has a lot of small-based infantry, so I'm like, well, didn't work out last time. He's not running Stormwall. Maybe the AoEs from my Stormfalls and from my Hype will be able to help clean up all the small-based infantry he's running.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which it did. He played Deflection up the whole entire game, as he rightfully should.
D-cell, and yes, he should.
Yeah, I'm sorry, D-cell, not Deflection.
Yep.
And, it was absolutely brutal.
Yeah, D-cell is... busted.
There was probably two power plays I made in that whole game. He did something that I haven't really seen like the guys that play Blazers in our shop do, and that's his light cav move was always forward.
Yeah.
Which is not something I've seen a lot from either you or Jay, or and I think you two are the only other two I've ever played against with Blazers.
Yeah.
You guys play more of the yo-yo, rope-a-dope type style with those guys, but
he played them really aggressive against me, too. Like, they were, like, all five were in the zone on that scenario. Yeah.
Well, he was, like, just jamming them into my Phoenix, and I got to combust three of them and boost the damage on all three.
Oh, wow.
And just kill three of them.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the only good thing I did the whole game is kill three Tempest Blazers with the Phoenix. Other than that, he absolutely kicked my ass.
I didn't watch the whole game, but when I walked over... He had a significant dead pile. Like, there was not a ton left.
I killed
left.
A lot of stuff, but...
And you had a hype
I never
left
felt
at
like I was
the
in
end
the
of the game, right?
Yeah, hype was left at the end of the game. Yeah. He killed Ron at a point where I was going to try and dominate the zone because I knew Dice was coming.
Yeah.
And I had to throw everything into killing this last two guys in the zone, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I did get a nice crit consume with hype and take down, like, 9 models. So, yeah, there was a spot where I was trying to clean out that zone. Didn't work out.
Yeah.
You know, there was some unfortunate misses. I don't want to say unfortunate. Like, I threw a lot of guns at guys, but it's not like there were fours to hit or anything. He's got deflection up, so.
D-cell.
It's like double
one
deflection.
Of these, yeah, one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, one of them's way better.
Yeah.
But,
mostly.
I did get to crit consume about 8 models on one shot. In that game as well, which also didn't matter.
What you should have done was crit consumed Alexia, because when I walked up, he was just like Alexia and just buying infinity attacks on your caster to kill you. Yeah. So
that's how the game ended. Was Alexia got that awesome charge on your my caster?
Yep.
But I didn't know Alexia had like Lamentation 2.0.
Yeah. God, she's so good.
You know, I don't think I've ever played against her in a tournament situation.
Yeah.
Not P Alexia.
I've only played against her a few times where the other guy was like a super competent tournament.
Yeah, playing her aggressively and everything.
Yeah.
But I went to walk up with Ron in that turn. I was trying to clear the left boob. And I walked up and tried to force hammer Tempest Blazer, and one of the two that still were alive. And he's like, that costs 8. And I'm like, I don't have 8. So never mind. I will instead hit you with my awesome reach weapon. And then I crit smited it, and it was still a POW 12 slam.
Nice.
And it only cost me 1 instead of 4.
That's tech as shit. See, that's what you should have done in the first place.
Then I did it with the other Tempest Blazer and crit slammed that one.
Well, his Tempest Blazers apparently did not survive that game.
His Tempest Blazers are melee machines, apparently. But no, it was an awesome game with a gracious opponent. You know, we joked around and had fun. There was never a second of contention.
Nah.
Except for Merlin always sandbagging, saying he's not good.
Yeah, right. Merlin's like, no, he's good. Yeah, you
just
know,
a kitchen table player.
Just going to practice it. Epic Haley was not very good.
He's like, all right, shut up, dude. Do you want to practice against Epic Haley, or do you want to practice against the other guy?
And Bill's like, practice. I want wins for my team,
I'm
bro.
Like, I will accept your concession so that my team has a chance of taking down Chuck's fucking evil team of doom.
Yeah. Well, and basically,
because we were still in the running at that point.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I told Merlin too when I played him. He's like, I'm just gonna play Haley because I want to play Haley. You know, I need practice with this list. And I'm like, well, we can still just pretend you didn't say that in list pick because I mean, I'm still like, I'm trying to get wins for my team. So you know, I want to drop the best list against you. And he's like, no, it's fine. Just pick whatever you want. I'll play Haley. And I was like, all right. Well, I'm
he basically did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Which I mean, honestly, you look at his list. It's like I would have kicked the shit out of his striker list probably. So, you know, just as far as list matchups, the Haley list had a much better matchup against my list. But yeah, so that was that.
I'm gonna get you one day, Merlin.
Yeah, that one Merlin. Day. He's just housing our meta. I think against us, he's like 3-0 now in tournaments.
He's 3-0 against
no,
me.
No, he's played you
he's
three times?
He's beaten me 3 times well, in a row
at
in
Michigan
tournaments.
Cups, he's 4-0 against our dudes. Because he's beat me, he's beat you twice, and he's beat Dreyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all with Epic Haley, actually.
Yep.
No, he beat you with Constance once.
Yeah, he beat me with Constance in the first round of the last Michigan Cup.
Mark of shame, by the way.
Yeah.
Getting beat by Constance. Although, I guess you were like, I don't know what your shit does.
That's pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
Then I won out that tournament.
All right, so that ran a lot longer than we expected. But anyway, quick shout-outs to all the guys there. I think we mentioned Bill and Cliff. Those guys were super rad bros. Shout-out to Bill's wife, Jen, for making the raddest macaroni salad in the history of macaroni salad.
Oh, my God, it was so good.
Yeah, they as part of the $20 entry fee for the day, which was perfectly legitimately like
it's
worth
the right
$20.
Number.
It is the right number, yeah, for sure. I would have paid more, but I mean, 20 was great. They had a lunch. It was hot dogs, and then we had like potato salad and macaroni salad and chips. I mean, it was you know like a picnic lunch.
Yeah, it was like a picnic lunch.
Perfectly good. Hit the spot too, man. Because I was
Chuck
like,
ate 3 hot dogs. Just spoiling.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be 2 hot dogs.
Yeah. Well,
Chuck, watch it.
Winning culture, Chuck.
Yeah. It's bad karma.
Yeah, so anyway, Chuck's hot dog eating habits aside, we didn't really get to talk much about Dan, but I just want to give a special shout-out to Dan, who was on my team, who went 4-1, and he played Chuck in the final and obviously lost because he was lost that one game. He got Chuck down to, I believe...
He had him like 3 or something.
3 hit points, yeah. He basically went for a Kaya... Port Tolaris assassination against Chuck's Rasheth list, which was Chuck was playing Rasheth and
5 heavies or something.
And think Hexy or something, but like...
Oh, yeah.
Both lists were very... Like, his board had like 25 models on it for both lists. They were very beast heavy, but Rasheth especially had like 5 Titan. You know, the Chain Gang theme list.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good list. And I think, you know, Dan was like, oh shit, what do I play against Chuck? And we talked about it, and I was like, I think... Your Kruger list would probably could sort of crowd control his list pretty well for a while with all the druids and all the other stuff, but I think ultimately Kaya is going to be the one that can crack
it. Kaya's the one that can crack it,
yeah,
for sure.
And I think he got into a peace trade that started going a little south, and he was like, well, I see this assassination, and he went for it. And I think basically what it came down to was he had upkept a spell that had he not upkept,
it would have had
one
attack.
More fury on it to end Rasheth as soft as fuck. So, like, yeah. She hits Rasheth with her melee weapon.
She's got to be hitting, like, dice minus two. She's probably Pal 12 and he's 14.
I think that's it, yeah. She may have a buff of some kind, I don't recall. She has flank warbeast, that's what it is. So, yeah, she would have crushed him. But, yeah, I mean, awesome effort out of him. I'm super impressed with him for taking Circle, which I think even he would admit Circle is probably, out of all his factions, probably the one that he's not as ultimately fluent with, because I don't think he has the reps of Circle that he does with, like, Caedor.
Or Signar.
Signar is, like, his little side project. But,
oh, really?
But Caedor...
he's got a lot of Signar.
He does.
He has a lot of Rhett, too.
Caedor and Rhett are probably his two best. I think Caedor is his best faction. But Circle, obviously, he's good with now. And so that was really cool to see him do well. We do a lot of Circle Dojo in our meta also, just because there's, you know, we have two full-time Circle players, myself and Gaby, and then some part-time ones as well. But, yeah, so... And ultimately, the way the event came down... it was the first place team was Chuck and
Jake
Hickok.
Clark.
Yeah, Jake Hickok, not Jake.
Not JVM.
JVM actually couldn't make it. He was on that team, and then Mike Clark took a spot in the last minute because
he filled his shoes pretty well.
Yeah, Mike. I think Mike got three wins, and then
he got four.
Oh, did he? Okay.
I think they had 2-4-1s and a 5-0.
I know Hickok was 4-1. He had just lost to me, and then Chuck went 5-0.
Yep.
And I don't know if Clark went 3 or 4 wins, but
I think he had
and then
four.
Yeah, my team got second with the tiebreaker over Bill's team that got third.
Yep.
So good job all around. I think we improved a little bit over the last Michigan Cup, and then, you know, hopefully this fall one we can take it down. I mean, I think that's our goal now is, like, we've gotten close enough. We need to win this damn thing.
Yep.
But I think we keep putting together this sort of big event experience with our guys who don't go to big events or go to cons. And I think it'll pay dividends when
it's already starting to, for sure.
And I think the next event is going to be more of like a Temple Con style team tournament, which I like that format better. And it also doesn't go 6 rounds potentially.
Yeah. It's definitely like a 3-rounder.
Yeah. And they may even do a bigger venue or something like that. Like there's been some preliminary talks about things like that. It's I'm not going to say for sure cause I don't know, but possibly a bigger event next year, more than 36. We'll see.
That'd be cool.
It would be super cool. All right, so now we'll just do our little recommendations bit, and then we're going to check out here, since the battle reports went way longer than we wanted them to, as usual.
5 minutes, they said. It'll be fun, they said.
Jesus. Are they ever fun?
I think we know who went over 5 minutes.
Yeah. even me on the rounds, I'm like, oh, these are going to be short ones, because my games are fast. And still...
Then Clark Kent had to come out.
Yeah, I had to take a leak. Sorry, buddy.
It's okay.
So, yeah, I'm going to recommend any kind of sandwich that comes on a croissant.
Why?
Croissants are the perfect food.
What did you have, like, a croissant today? Because I eat lunch with you, like...
I did.
Not figuratively, literally every day.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen you eat a croissant in
it's because we don't have... All right, well, there's this place here in the Metro Detroit area called Joseph's, and it's a European-style bakery. It's been around since, like, the 70s or something.
I feel like you should live in England or something. Love tennis and fancy things, eating organically, and probably would like to walk to work or something.
That would be dope. Or ride a bike. That'd be great.
Yeah, see? You're, like, such a hipster. Yeah.
I'm a modern man.
Croissant.
Yeah. So this croissant that we got was, like, broccoli... chicken something or other, but holy fuck, it was the best thing I've ever had. So good. Anyway, any kind of like old school, any kind of like, I'll just say this as a blanket recommendation, any sort of mom and pop bakery or deli that's been there since like the 1940s. Yeah, that's me fumbling my phone around. Any place like that that's been there forever.
Yeah.
Is almost always.
Well, there's a reason it's been there forever.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah, and they don't cut corners because they do it the same way they did in like 1970 or 1950 or whenever the fuck they opened this place, and that usually means the food is fucking amazing.
Is the place like a castle too?
No, it's got you know, you walk in and it.
Where is it? NGP?
Yeah, it looks like a little French cafe. It's got like some little tables out front, and then you walk in, And then there's this, it's got the you know, the sort of circular glass counter.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, the circular sneeze guard, if you will. And then there's just all these incredible fucking desserts through all that. And then they got the little corner with like the croissants. And oh my God. Their coffee's incredible. I mean, it's just, it's legit.
You could probably sit in there and watch like a tennis match. Well, and eat at a little cafe table.
You could if they had televisions, but they don't have televisions in there.
I bet they'd probably like set up a shitty tube television so you could feel like it was 1970.
What they could do is have two dudes dressed in all white go outside on the grass.
And just play some lawn tennis.
Yeah, play some lawn tennis.
In their super short white shorts.
Yeah, yeah, like real men.
Yeah. All right.
So I don't know what I was recommending there, but I really like food.
Yeah. I am going to recommend something that I'm sure has been recommended by the podcast we stole recommending from.
It actually has. Yeah.
I'm sure it has. That's where I heard about it, and that was Robo Rally. That game is so awesome. We played it the other day at the shop, and all four of us that were playing had tears running down our face. We were laughing so hard, having such a blast at that game.
It literally cleared out. Like, I've been having sinus problems for like the past couple forever months because of winter. And it, like, cleared me out. That's how I laughed so hard I literally had snot running down my fucking face, where I had to, like, just be like, hey, guys, pause the game. I got to walk away. I gotta go to the bathroom. Like, that's how bad it was. It was just slaying us, man, because we kept fucking up.
Yeah, we're a bunch of idiots.
It's so much
fun.
One
guy gets pushed and it fucks everything up.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and
one thing when, like,
just when a guy's turn goes off the rails and his head is in his hands because he realizes he has fucked up. It's just, it's so great to see your friends in total despair.
Yeah. You just get
over
to
this
rub their face
epic
and shit.
They
yeah,
had.
It's so good.
And the real modification we made to the rules that I think really helps, and it's just that we fucked it up and I don't think we should correct it. And that's that we run the timer immediately rather than waiting for the first person to finish all their registers.
Yeah, basically the way the game works is you have like a little register, which is like a program of, you get a hand of cards and you put five cards down. And you activate your robot. Everybody activates your robots, sort of. Everyone does their first card, then their second card. And then when you're
doing
the cards,
simultaneously activate your guys.
Yeah, and then when you do that, also the stuff on the table happens. And by the stuff on the table, I mean there's like a factory floor. So there's like conveyor belts, lasers, and all sorts of hazards that can affect your dude. So if you're like, I'm going to move forward too, and that puts you on a laser, then that laser fucking shoots you, and you take a point of damage. And then as you take damage, your robot gets shittier and starts like getting stuck turning left and just... really funny stuff.
It's so great.
It's so good. It is like the perfect game for like 4+ players.
Yeah, it seems like it's the more the merrier. I played it the other day with 5 and it was great.
Yeah, it's really funny. But yeah, so we would just watch like the amount of time, especially early on, the clock pressure people would fuck up their program. And so, you know, like watching Bill basically get stuck on a conveyor belt. A fast conveyor belt that was just going around in a circle, and you literally went on this conveyor belt like 4 or 5 times in a row, and then he finally gets off of it and immediately runs into a wall that's next to a laser, and then just keeps running straight into the wall, getting lasered repeatedly until he explodes. I mean, it was just like we were howling with laughter at this game, and I haven't laughed that hard in a while anyway, but especially at a board game.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's the best. So,
yeah,
so
I can't praise it enough.
Next con we go to, actually, that's a good segue. We're going to Adepticon for sure.
I'm bringing Robo Rally.
We're bringing Robo Rally. If some bros want to Robo Rally, hit us up.
Can we make an official request to play some Cripple Systems dudes Robo Rally?
Yeah, I mean, the odds of them listening to this are extremely slim.
That's true.
But we can, you know, we have social media like Twitter and Facebook to contact.
Let's challenge them to Robo Rally.
Yeah, we should. We should.
Their podcast Robo Rally?
They actually did like a podcast challenge with the Muzon Minis guys at like a local tournament, and then those dudes didn't even show up. And they're like,
let's do that.
4-0 against these guys because they're not here.
Let's just have like a nobody actually listens to our podcast, so this is the official challenge now.
Yeah.
For the Muse podcast. Yeah. Robo Rally Challenge.
Right.
We're taking all comers.
Right, and then no one shows up, and then we
win. Up to 2 dudes from each podcast.
So we win by default.
And then we just win. It's just me versus you, and we win.
I feel like Nate would be like
Nate would probably house the shit out of us.
Yeah, he's like a savant at Robo Rally, probably.
God, I love Nate.
Oh, man, it's such a good game.
I have such a man crush on Nate.
I know you do, buddy.
I always see him at cons, and then I never talk to him.
Yeah, maybe you should consider shaking his hand and saying, you know, tell him how much you love him. Maybe one of those things.
Nate, I bought Robo Rally because you said I should.
Yeah, no, it's a great game. So, but to segue into Adepticon for a sec, we're going. We're probably going to podcast again before we go. Adepticon, we're recording this.
It's another week still before.
Yeah, Adepticon. Adepticon, right? We have a basically 2 weeks.
It'll be. We got Saturday. Whole week.
We have next Saturday, and then the Saturday after is the Saturday of Adepticon. Yeah. So we'll probably podcast again before we go. We're going to try to talk a little bit about
what our plans are for that. We're going to sort of do like the same cycle we did the fourth podcast?
Yeah, something.
A similar cycle to that we did for Michigan Cup. We'll do it again for Adepticon.
Yeah.
Maybe talk about what we're going to do with our lists, some strategy plan. The format's a little different. It's Masters.
Yeah.
I might not even be taking the same faction. We'll see.
Yeah, I'll be playing Circle. It's just more like, holy shit, what third caster do I play and how do I build a... Because three lists Divide and Conquer, one, and it's a four-round fucking tournament.
Basically, I need to figure out how I'm going to put my Master Link tray to work with three lists.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to run three super balanced lists that I don't mind getting locked into.
Because when you play Divide and Conquer one on a three-list format on a four-round tournament... Yeah.
I mean, it is brutal.
You've got a good chance of getting locked
in. Yeah, and it really makes some of the some factions hard to compensate for.
You get sort of soft locked into things. It's like, I'm kind of locked into playing this guy, so I don't get locked in next round.
Yeah, right. So, I'm not super concerned, but
almost like you have to be a master of the faction.
Maybe. Or you might have to play a faction that doesn't get locked into super bad matchups. Like, I think Signar has a really hard time winning in that format. Because at some point you have to play the non-Haley, non-Kane 2 list. And if you're like, oh, I'm locked or I'm almost locked and they've got Runes of War or something, and you're like, oh, fuck. You know, I mean, there's some bad matchups there.
Right.
But, you know, you the Crixes, the Circles, the Legions of the world, probably in a better spot, I think. Like, I'm not super worried about it. Menoth, yeah, they're in a great spot in 3 lists probably, so... Yeah, so anyway, we'll wrap this up, but a couple things. If you guys want to hang out at Adepticon, hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. Like we said, it's at Warman's Podcast or facebook.com/Warman's Podcast. Hit us up on the Muse thread if you want. And we're really stoked about going. We kind of made the decision late to go, but I'm really excited. I haven't really been to an Adepticon before, and I haven't really played in three
Masters.
No,
I've never played Adepticon either.
I haven't played in a Masters event, and I haven't played a Death Clock event for fucking ever, so this will be interesting.
Yeah, I know at Gen Con, I was there, and I didn't put myself out there at all. We did meet a lot of dudes at War Machine Weekend. It was really cool,
yeah.
and I really, that's what I'm looking forward to about Death Con, and really, that's it. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, we're hoping to, like...
I want
to
see the dudes from Connecticut. I want to see the Muse guys.
Yeah, the Dark Omen guys. We have to, like, initiate our podcast rivalry with them, because I feel like that was discussed, but never really... The shit talk never really materialized, so I'm not sure who dropped the ball on
rivalry.
That. That's what I'm saying.
I don't want to. I like those guys.
Yeah, that's why the rivalry is fun.
I don't want to be rivals. I want to be pals.
Oh.
Can we be podcast pals?
Well, obviously. We're already podcast pals with them.
Dude, Anthony, Berger,
yeah.
They're bros.
Basically, just want to, like, you know, talk to Anthony about Circle all day.
Yeah, you should. He's a successful Circle player.
Yeah, some of the articles he's written on Hand Cannon about, like, Mosar and Baldur 1. His Baldur 1 article, especially, was what got me started playing Baldur 1. And I was like, holy fuck, Baldur 1's good.
Yeah.
Well, Baldur 1 was like
a super solid bro.
Yeah, Baldur 1.
Got a good handshake on that man.
Well, you know, he's a large man. Intimidating.
Dude, I want that guy on my team. If we get in a bar fight, I'm going to be standing right next to Anthony.
I feel like
you know that Looney Tune with the little tiny yappy dog and then like the big bulldog?
Right.
I'm the little yappy dog.
I feel like if Dark Omen is looking for some drinking bros to get in like barroom brawls with, they're not going to pick us.
Come on, I'm a pretty hefty dude. Maybe right, not fine. You.
They're not going to pick me.
Well, you got a chip on your shoulder. You're feisty.
Yeah, I will initiate fights.
Yeah, you can be the yappy dog.
You guys will have to
I'll be the medium-sized bulldog, and then Anthony will do the real heavy lifting.
Yeah, you'll be the spectator who takes like cell phone pictures of my broken face. And that'll be it. So
I'll hold you back, bro.
All right, so here's the rules for Adepticon. We will drink. We will not bar fight. We will play Robo Rally. We're playing in both Masters qualifiers, and I'm playing in an IG, I think. We're probably going to jet Sunday morning, but we're going to be there the whole time otherwise. So we would love to meet anybody. We're going to try to get some like Warman shirts or something made beforehand. Doubtful it's going to happen, but maybe we'll figure something out.
We know a guy.
Yeah. Not to sell, but maybe to just make ourselves identifiable.
Just so you can figure out who we are.
Right.
So we should probably put pictures up on Facebook of what we look like.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the worst.
We'll figure something out, but basically, this is our first con as, like, you know, we're like the War Man's guys, and, you know, we would actually really like to talk to some people about it. It happened for us at War Machine Weekend, which is really awesome, and it sort of was like an accident. Like, random guys would come up and be like, "I recognize your voice. You're on that podcast. You're cool."
Yeah, that was mind blowing.
Yeah, it was, and you know, I just in general, we're trying to, what some of the podcasts do really well that we haven't done is to sort of interact with the community more, and I think that's just something that we need to do more, because we super value your guys' opinion. It's just more like we haven't really been.
Yeah, don't think it's because we don't want to. It's because it's more because we're like, we don't think we're a big deal, so we don't want to just start reaching out to fans that we don't have.
Yeah, exactly. But so basically, to end the podcast on one note, talking about social media and whatnot, I'd like to just steal a bit that the Clockwork Vox guys do, who are cool bros as well. They do like a question of the week thing. I thought of this question of the week last week, and I was like, oh, this would be a good one for us. And basically, what I'd like, if anybody's interested in answering this, post, tag us on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever, in a thread I'm using on Minis. But basically, just let us know what you think the best designed caster is in the game. And by best designed caster, I mean the caster that you would say, this guy or this girl, it should be the baseline that all other casters are balanced to, whether it's up or down to that level. And just give a pretty good explanation of why, if possible. You know, if it's just like, oh, I think it's, you know, Kane 2 without an explanation, then, you know, that's not very helpful. But anyway, I think that should generate
There's
some
your homework.
Yeah, that's your homework. That should generate some interesting discussion. I have some really strong ideas about this, and I think you know, we can get into that next week a little bit. But
that'd be cool.
Anyway, sayonara.
All right,
dudes.
Guys. Podcast over.
Warband.
Or something. That's all I've been thinking about recently is food. I have this, like, I think I'm pregnant.